Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So I was just asking one of my friends and reporters off the air, Jessica Rivera, who just started with us Monday. She's a professional broadcaster, lots of experience, and now is helping us out Mondays, about Vivek Ramaswamy, who I've been calling Obama Swampy, because I just don't trust him at all. I think he's a total fraud. Anyway, but I said, how can he afford his own political event? He's got his own campaign event. Nobody else does. The goobers don't. So I'm like, how can he do that? I'm like, I don't know. So, and then she reminded me that he's got his own money. I'm thinking, whoa, okay. What is he spending his own money? Is that really his own money? Anyway, it's enough about politics. Let's. I need a theme. Oh, there's Pianca in the line too, so maybe he can answer the question. Do I have any like music I can introduce? Let's have a little fun this morning. It's not playing. It's not playing. Well, I heard my intro. That's not good. All right, let's try this again. First of all, let's bring on Tara D with the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter Report. I was trying to play something. Did you hear any music or no?
I heard, I think it was America, the very beginning.
America the Beautiful, yeah. I didn't hear it at all. Let me try it again. I was going to do something kind of cool. But if I can't play my things, let's see what plays. No, I can't hear a thing. Great. I can't hear my sound effects. Oh, that's going to be interesting. That's going to make for an interesting day. Oh, let's turn it off again. All right. Thanks so much for that. I was going to do a real patriotic pet thing. I was going to kind of make it up on the spot. But so much for that. That's our glitch for today. I can't hear my own stuff.
All right.
That's no good.
That can be problematic, I would think.
I would think so. Well, it doesn't happen very often, but everything happens sometime. You know, sometimes the show just completely blanks out. You know, sometimes I have to call in by cell phone. I don't have the DB meter. Sometimes I sneeze like now. Hang on. I'm going to have to mute myself here. Oh, good. I got the button at the right time. I didn't shut the show off. So this is good. That's fine.
That's a good thing. Yeah, see, things are looking up already.
They are, yeah, except I can't hear my own stuff. I wonder if this is just that one or maybe it's something else. Let me try something else just for the fun of it here.
Oh.
This is Greg Penglis. Okay, that one's working. I wonder why this one isn't working. Oh, now it's working because I sneezed. And now... a patriotic moment with our patriotic pets, with Tara D, of the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter. Do you have a pet?
Good morning,
if
everyone.
If not, you should. What? There we go. Okay, you go ahead. You do it.
Okay, sorry. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, and then I'll go back to you.
Oh, thank you. Pets are America. America is pets. Dogs and cats built this nation. You think you could cross the prairies without your dog or your cat? Do you think you could have survived the rat invasion without your cats? Do you think you could have herded your sheep and cattle without your dogs? Do you think you could hunt without your dogs? Do you think you could get along without that little Yorkie yapping in your lap? This is America. America is pets. Pets are us. And now Tara D with the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter pet update.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's very patriotic, and I like it.
I literally made that up on the spot, but I tend to do that. Well, no, I started doing that. Bill Fecky was the first victim, and he was like really ranting. He was good, and he was like going on and on. So I just started playing in the background. He's like, "What's that?" I said, "No, just keep going, Bill." Oh, okay. So he ran with it, and he had this really great rant. And then we had Christina Bob, who's Trump's attorney, right? So she started ranting on. So I said, keep going. I said, I'll give you a little music. And she wasn't into it. So then I ranted. You know, I mean, it's just, this show is so spontaneous.
Hey, it adds a little oomph to it. So I like it.
Oh, yeah. Nobody knows. And then Pianki says, where did you go? And I sneezed. That's what I'd be. Apparently after I sneezed, it worked. So that's you know, usually you get like a hammer and you hit something and then it works. But no, in this case.
Then it comes back
so if your radio show doesn't work, try sneezing. I'll have some stuff nearby.
Yes. Work.
Exactly. Well, now that we've digressed thoroughly, why don't you introduce yourself once again, and we'll get back on. You know, so we'll try to get back on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hi, everybody. I'm Tara D. I am with Santa Rosa County Animal Services. We are located at 4451 Pine Forest Road in Milton, Florida. Our cell phone, or our number, is 850-983-4680. Our website is santarosa.fl.gov/animals, and we also are on Facebook and Instagram.
Well, that sounds good. I would recommend giving your out your cell phone number. You might get a call from Cuba or, you know, Belarus or any of the other places we happen to reach. You know,
well, or someone wants to sell those solar panels and whatnot. So.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I don't get a lot of soliciting, but I know people. Well, you know, I think the soliciting quotient increases depending on how crowded your living situation. If you're one of the newer housing developments where the houses are like 6 inches apart, it's good to be a traveling salesperson because you got so many houses. But if you're in these areas where you have like an acre or a half an acre, nobody wants to knock on their doors. It's too far away. You spend all your time walking and driving between places. Yeah. But isn't that better for pets though? I mean, now that I segued into it, you know, are these houses good for people? Well, I'm just thinking.
The person on the family. Yeah. Oh. So, you know, if the owner is a responsible pet owner, which we talk about that a lot, which it really goes back to at least 50% of the issues or more go back to that. So if they make sure the animal gets proper exercise, and it doesn't have to be a huge yard, but you might have to put a little effort in there, maybe walk them. And it's always good if you have a dog to walk them. And I'm guilty of not doing it as often as I should as well. But that creates a bond with your pet, and it gives them manners and exercise. So if you just have them in the yard, they're just a yard dog. If you ever have to go to the vet, they're not going to know what a leash is. They're not going to know how to act around others. Walking is very important. It's exercise. It's good mental stimulation, physical activity for the dog and for yourself. And it's just a positive thing. So even if you have a small yard, you can do steps to make sure that your dog gets proper exercise. And it's really important. It makes a huge difference in their overall health, the same as it does with humans.
Yeah. Unless I had, a big property that needed gardening, I probably wouldn't have a dog. You know, I'd like to have a big yard for them. I was just thinking if I had, like, guard dogs, I'll name them, you know, Genghis Khan, Hannibal, you know, Alexander the Great, all the great, you know, conquerors in history that would be a name for my dogs. But I just think the small yards, it's not as conducive to pets, especially, you know, when you're walking your – well, here's a question, too. Pianki's on the line. He wants to talk to you. People who walk dogs in crowded neighborhoods where other people are walking dogs, how do you deal with dog conflict? Especially if you have like a big dog, you know, you're walking your Rottweiler and Pepe the Chihuahua walks by. It's not an equal situation right there. So
hopefully you want to have control of your animal. That's the key because he's your responsibility. If your dog hurts someone else, it's on you. You're on the hook for it. So that's where if you're walking your dog on a regular basis, then your dog is going to know he better mind you because that's part of the bond. You know, he does what you ask of him. And so if you're walking your dog, even if he's reactive, you should be able to walk him. And then if you see a dog, you know, scoot to the other side of the road as a precaution if your dog is reactive to other dogs. I have a Rottweiler that was my mother's, and he is super, super strong. And now that I have back issues, I actually have some trouble walking him. So my boyfriend mostly has to walk him. But he is good with other dogs. But if a dog comes up to him and is, you know, got an attitude, he'll kind of give it back. So we're just always cautious when we do go places. I make sure he walks the dog so he can handle him. And we have a special harness leash that we use with him to give more control. And basically just sure that we're kind of aware. He's actually the small one. My other girl is bigger than him. I have the big guys. So but we just make sure that, you know, we are aware of our surroundings. If we see another dog, you know, and if that dog looks, you know, if it's a cute little puppy, okay, cool if it comes up. But if it looks like a big burly guy that's kind of barking already, looking like he's not sure about the situation, we're just going to stay on the other side of the road since there's no confrontation, because it's not worth it to take a chance with your dog or with another one's pet. So
I'll get Pianki's question in a second, but I want to ask you another one. Do dogs I imagine they're somewhat like people in that like kids, you know, so if you're kind of a weak parent and you've got like a big, you know, football player, high school football player to like, you know, 4'8" mom, you know, especially if she's not real strong, then the high school kid's going to be a lot more reactive. So is walking, if your boyfriend walking a Rottweiler, especially if he's a big guy, is that better? Does the Rottweiler respect him more? Not that he wouldn't respect you, but outside it might be more, you know, I mean, if I were a big dog, I'd probably want to take liberties if I had a small owner and I could like carry them with me, you know, all over.
Yeah.
The
I see what you're saying. No, actually for mine is just my back, and I'm trying not to make it worse. So I'm like, hey, you walk him.
Right.
And he spends a lot of one-on-one time with him. So
yes, dear.
Like if somebody gets hurt or it's going to be you. So, but he, you know, he does very well with him. But, you know, before I had my back in such disarray, I would, you know, walk my big dogs all the time, no problem. And it's a matter of just making, you know, making sure they know that they have to mind you. And that's very important. And like one of our rescue groups is called the Joy Committee. We work with them. We've worked with them for many years. They primarily do German Shepherds. One of the top ladies of the rescue is maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. She's a teeny petite little lady, and she will handle shepherds like nobody's business because she has that commanding presence, and she knows how
to
train them.
Right.
Yeah, and she knows what to do, so she has no trouble with these big, huge shepherds, like probably that outweigh her very easily, and she is like, they are like, okay, mom, whatever you say. So it's just a matter of knowing what you're supposed to do with the pet, and, you know, and like with children, if you let them get away with things, they're going to push the boundaries. So you have to set boundaries just like you do with children, and you have to, you know, you have to enforce those. If you let your dog get on the couch sometimes and then you're like, oh, you're not supposed to be up here. Well, he's assuming, well, you let me up there yesterday. So you just want to be consistent because it's easier for them if they know what their boundaries are. And then, you know, if you want to let him on the couch, that's your business. My dog is on the couch all the time, but some people are not okay with that. So you kind of need to stick to that. If that's going to be how things go, just keep it consistent for the pet. It's easier to train if you're consistent.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the worst one, I think, sorry, Bianchi, one more question. The worst one is when people, they yell at the dog, come here. And of course the dog does, then they hit the dog. It's like, you idiot. You just told the dog to come to you. It did what you said, and then you hit it. You know, because they think they're punishing the dog for running away. But the dog, all the dog goes
I
towards you and you hit me.
I get exactly.
And then the dog doesn't come back the next time. Then they get mad. The owner gets even madder. It's like, you're not thinking like a dog, you idiots. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and that's like, I had a situation where my dog got, I have the two dogs that don't like each other, so one of them was in the house with the other one, and I was like, oh, my gosh, so I started to panic, and so I called the one dog upstairs, and I did it with a forceful voice, and she was like, I'm not coming to you, what's going on? So I had to go, come on, and then she came right up, you know, and I was like, okay, she's thinking she's in trouble, she's not going to come to me. So just things like that you have to be aware of. I know, like, our trainer at the shelter, so when she's working with dogs that maybe have a little reactivity or behavior, taking them out of the kennel, and if they're acting like, you know, doing the alligator roll and jumping and being very mouthy, she will not walk them until they calm down, and that's going to enforce to them, oh, I've got to behave if I want to get out of this kennel. Because if you take them out when they're acting all crazy, they're just going to think, oh, that's the way to get out. I just jump and make enough noise, they're going to get me out of here. So by taking that extra minute to let them calm down and sit, then they know, oh, okay, this is what is expected to me. I have to be good if I want to go have yard time and have play time. So just little things like that is enforcing the good behavior instead of the bad behavior.
Yes, good behavior will be rewarded. Bad behavior will be punished. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Then some people, you know, some people don't have boundaries with their pets and let their pets get away with everything. And sometimes it's not a big deal. But if you have a big, strong dog, you definitely want to be able to handle them without a danger to someone else. You don't want them getting loose from you and running into the street or running to another pet if they're reactive. So just some things to think about. There's lots of great training programs and trainers. If you don't have enough money to do a training program yourself, there are lots of, you know, you can go to the ASPCA and things like that on the websites, and they have good tips. And there's lots of YouTube videos nowadays that you can get good information as well.
Interesting. I got another question for you, but I want to get to Bianchi. Bianchi, you got a question for Tara D?
Well, I was going to ask her. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't people don't pick up after their dogs more often?
You know, that is a great question, and people
grass.
Are lazy. Yes, they need to carry poop bags, because let me tell you, we do have a couple dogs at the shelter right now that had hookworms, and it's it can be contagious. So if a dog has an infestation and they poop somewhere and another dog runs to it, they can pick up that they can pick up that parasite. So very important to pick up after your dog, and it's a courteous thing to do. It's rude to let your dog, you know, do their business in someone else's property and then just leave it. That's kind of rude. So if people could be courteous, pick up after the dog, it's going to keep all the dogs healthier, and it's just nicer. And no one wants to step in doggy do.
Yeah, the parasite. What's that? That's just horrible. I mean, that was always I couldn't stand that when I was, you know, sipping some dog's poop. But the parasite aspect is something I never thought of. That's really interesting. So and of course, dogs run to it because it's like, ooh, who's in the neighborhood now? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, they run to, you know. Well, so why is that? Dogs' smell is 10,000 times more sensitive than ours, and they love smelling the most disgusting things. How is that possible?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
I think it's with people too, you know, because if somebody's like, oh, this smells awful, and then everybody wants to smell it to see what it smells like. So it's just, you know, I don't think it, but you know, they do, they can smell things way. And it's interesting because and hearing too, it's like, you don't hear anything and the dog's already alerting you, someone's at the door, and you're like, nobody's out there. And then 3 minutes later, I guess when the person like got out of their car, walked up the driveway, knocked on the door, then you know someone's there, but they already knew it and they've already determine if it's a threat or not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Huh. So how can they, do they hear, I thought they hear different frequencies, but I didn't know they actually hear better. But their hearing is much more sensitive, right?
Yes. Like, because they have the, you know, they can hear higher pitches than us. And I don't know all the details on that. But, you know, the dog, I don't know about the dog whistles because I'm not a dog. So, but, you know, if you play music or something, you can tell when the dog is noticing the difference on the pitch and things like that. And for us, we're like, oh, we couldn't tell any difference. So.
Well, I don't tend to play things above my hearing range because what's the point? You know, I play it pretty high up on the guitar, though. I do get off the fretboard, play some really high notes. And that's when the dog across the street goes, oh, Greg's playing, bark. You know, it's kind of funny. But yeah, they can hear it too. That's interesting. But but especially for loud noises around dogs too. I mean, people that take dogs hunting, do they think about the dog's hearing? I mean, you know, you could be really damaging dog hearing, especially the higher frequencies, because those are the ones get the with people. I know this because I studied this for a while. That the higher frequencies, you know, the thinner hairs, the nerve cells, they're the ones that go. And those are the ones where you can tell consonants and other things. And that's when you can always tell a hearing loss with somebody, you know, if they're in a restaurant and there's background noise, because the higher tones are gone and they can't hear those consonants, those S's and H's, and they're sort of all kind of mushed together. So I'm just wondering about, people think about protecting dog hearing, you know, especially like we've talked fireworks before, gunshots, you know, backfiring trucks, even truck mechanic stuff,
that's
you know.
A good question.
Yeah. Huh.
I think as a whole, hunters probably don't, but I'm sure there are hunters that possibly do things for their dogs, but I think it's one of those things that just kind of overlooked as a whole, you know. But I know that, you know, as things progress in the animal world, I know there's a lot, you know, a lot of people are doing things that they didn't do before, they didn't think of, you know, taking your dog out while they're putting booties on them so their feet don't get burnt, or if they're in the ice so they don't get frozen. So things like that where maybe it wasn't a deal before, but people are like, oh, you know what, I'm noticing that this is a problem, or I need to adjust this, so let's figure out something that's helpful for the dog. And so I think people do try to do, if it's easy and it can be, you know, something that all people can access, I think people will do it, animal people, I would say. But then there's always going to be a sector of people that think of animals as disposable, secondary, as property, and they're not going to do anything extra other than feed them, and maybe if they're lucky, get a pat on the head.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was flight instructing, and people would take their dogs flying, and they'd wear a headset. So they're protecting their hearing, and of course they do nothing for the dog. Now, there actually are dog headsets. You know, they're like dog and cat little muffler things, so that because the noise inside an airplane, that's not really soundproof like most of them. It's pretty loud, and you really can't hear. I mean, in the old days, you know, we didn't have much hearing protection. But as we got smarter, you know, we all wear our Dave Clarks. You know, it's that green headset you see all the time. But they can actually protect hearing for animals, too. People should think about that, especially if you have a loud truck, a big diesel, you know, or anything that's loud, because their hearing is so sensitive. You know, there are products out there. Have you looked into that in the shelter at all, that maybe something you could offer for people, you know, that, you know, when Billy Bob comes in and says, well, I want to go get on a bloodhound, I'm going to go hunting. And we say, well, you know, have you thought of hearing protection for your animal when you're shooting? Well, I never really thought about that, but thanks very much. Sounds like a good idea. My apologies to my redneck brethren. But it's another thing you can offer. I do accents for fun, but it's a hobby. But where do we get the Indian? Well, put a little curry on your chicken tandoori. Be a wonderful time. Thank you very much. Anyway, sorry. We should talk about what dishes.
Yeah, we don't really sell anything, you know. So we don't really sell any items for the animals. We just take the dog or take the cat. We're just focused on getting them to a home. So, but you know, for an accessory shop or something, that might be a good little option.
Check that hearing.
Pets. But you know, you see animals with the goggles on. Not all the time, but I've seen that fairly often. Animals have the little cute little goggles, and they're cute, but all when the dog sticks his head out of the car window, he's got little cute goggles to protect his eyes. So
They do get stones and things, you know, they do get stones and things up in their eyes when they're hanging their heads out, right? I mean, that is a real thing.
Oh, they could, yeah. Like, or bugs, even a bug at, you know, 50 miles an hour in your eyeball is not going to feel good. So, and dogs love to stick their heads out the window. So we're not saying don't allow them to do that. But, you know, if you throw some goggles on them, then they're going to be safe. And they'll look really cool, too. So then everybody's going to go, look at that cute dog with the goggles on. So you'll get a lot of, you'll get a lot of attention as well. So
little helmet, little flying scarf. Yeah, you'd be all set. That's fun.
Absolutely.
But why do dogs do that? Is anybody ever figured out why they do that? They just like the fresh air
I think they love the wind in their face, honestly. I don't know if there's a scientific reason other than they just have a joy for life.
It's fun.
Sometimes I think we overlook. Yeah, and they're like, this is cool, let's do it, you know. Whereas people are like, my hair or whatever, you know. So the same thing, I think the same reason that some people, I was going to say the same reason some people have convertibles and some people will never have one. It's just, you know, difference in personalities. But dogs as a whole, I think they love it.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, what do we got for critters this week?
Let's see. So we have lots of lovely. So we were pretty empty in our cat adoption area, but that is no longer the case. We have, I think, about 25 kittens up for adoption. Some of our long-timers, we had Link, who was a beautiful orange tabby. He got adopted last week, so super happy for that. Now we've got pretty much all the adoptables for cats are all kittens, probably 6 months or under. So if you're looking for a kitten, it's a great time to come. So it's a $10 adoption fee, and that includes spay and neuter, microchipping, and age-appropriate vaccinations. So you're going to get a fantastic deal. And also, we are starting the Bissell Empty the Shelter event. That starts on October 1st, and that runs through the 15th. And so that what that is just kind of a national thing the Bissell Foundation does. So when you go to
the
shop
the
and get a vacuum cleaner.
Scrubbers, rug shampoo. Who is Bissell?
Yes.
Is that a cleaning product?
Crosswave and all that. Yes, they do cleaning products, vacuums, shampooers, and, you know, some companies, they say they support animal welfare. These guys absolutely put their money where their mouth is. They created one of the family members, Kathy Bissell, created the Bissell Foundation, and so they do a lot with animal welfare. They send a lot of money out to shelters and rescues every year, and they're highly involved in animal rescue. So, you know, they've helped our shelter directly when we had a hoarding case a couple years back. And we were able to save over 80 dogs and get them out to other rescues thanks to their efforts. So they're fantastic.
Hoarding.
So when you have 80 dogs, it's no longer you're an animal lover. Like, that's a serious issue. And unless you are like, you know, have an organization that you're running, but a single person caring for 80 dogs is just, you know, and the intentions are good, but there are issues at play there, and it's a serious thing. So, you know, that was, I believe it was, I'm trying to think of the month. Was it December? January, February 2022.
I mean, that's a pack. So that's if they ever got out, that's a wild pack, you know, of animals.
80 dogs is just, it was a crazy amount, and it was just a huge undertaking. But, we did great with the community. The Bissell Foundation assisted us, many rescues. So we were able to get, 85 dogs out of the shelter and out of this condition into safety. So it was a good way to show that the community working together can make mountains move. So it was great. But, the Bissell Foundation, we're going to do $5 adoptions October 1 through October 15, and that's for cats and dogs. So we're excited about that because it gets people in. And we get to show them our animals, and then they get a really low adoption fee. So that money they were going to take to adopt the pet, they can just take that to get their flea and tick prevention, heartworm prevention with their vet, and just kind of stock up on supplies that they would need.
Makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So for dogs,
So for dogs, I've got little Dan, who was in my office a couple weeks ago, and he came down with kennel cough, which kennel cough is kind of like just, you know, a common cold for dogs. And they'll have some upper respiratory, they'll have some, excuse me, some coughing. And so they get a course of antibiotics. yeah, it sounds like it, doesn't it? it could be, I don't know. But so he went to a foster home until he got over that, because it is contagious to other dogs. And so he's all ready to go now, so he's back ready for adoption. So we have listed him as available on the adoption site. And he's just a sweet little puppy. I say little, but he's just a little chunky guy and very, very affectionate and loving. So go check him out on our website. He's up for adoption again now. And then we've got a little tyke named Cooper. So Cooper is a, I would say he almost looks like golden retriever, but in a long-haired Dachshund body. He's about 25 pounds. Gentleman found him, hung on to him for the foster period of about a month, tried to work with him until we had space to bring him in. And he's very fearful, but he's coming around. And we initially thought he didn't like dogs, but I think maybe he's just a little unsure of himself. But we just got him neutered, medical's clear, he's up to speed. He's a beautiful little dog, just absolutely cute as pie. And he just came available for adoption a couple of days ago, so we don't think he'll last long. But he does need to be probably an adult-only household, because I don't know that he has been around any children.
Hmm. I just got a note from Mark on the Netherlands. He says, isn't that the law we were talking about, picking up after your dog, from Bianchi's question? Is the dog owners here have to carry their plastic bags? I think they have to do here as well, right? I mean, it sounds like, most civilized countries.
Teeny little rolls that'll fit in your pocket, and they're just super easy to carry. And then most people wouldn't mind you using their trash, you know, their trash receptacle if you have something to put in there, if it's, you know, bagged up, obviously. So
now take it home, carry it with you in your pocket. Come on, be civil.
Yeah.
That's
or carry a bag with you. If your dog likes to have lots of pit stops, you can just throw it in a Walmart.
Well, yeah, this is where the big dog comes in, you know, especially, I don't get too graphic in the morning because people are still having, you know, coffee and breakfast, but, you know, if you're a big dog, it's a big poop, so you need a big bag. You know, it's like, geez.
Oh, yeah, it can be a lot, absolutely.
Oh, no. Well, how much can a big dog eat per week? I'm just curious, you know. 25 pounds,
it depends on their dog food. So, like, for my dog, she is about 150. She's a mastiff. And
right.
So her scheduled food, according to her weight, is like 6 cups a day. So she gets fed in the morning and then the evening. And then I cut back a little bit because she's chunky and we're trying to get a little weight off of her. And then the Rottweiler boy, I think he gets a little bit less, but it depends on the dog food. Usually there's a recommendation on there of how much to feed them, but if you feed them better quality food, then sometimes you don't feed them as much. If you feed them a cheaper dog food, there's a lot of fillers in there, and sometimes you might have to give them more food. So just check your recommendations and check with your vet too, because you might think it's okay your dog to be getting 6 cups a day and he's 40 pounds, then he's probably going to be 50 pounds. So
yeah.
You may be overfeeding him. So
dogs will eat.
Overfeeding is a
problem.
That's a good question.
Do you give them greens?
Greens? Well, I know green beans are a great additive to their diet because they're relatively no calories. So a lot of the veterinarians will recommend, if you're trying to put your dog on a diet and you want to supplement them because they're still hungry, it's called a green bean diet, and you just kind of supplement them, take some of their kibble out and replace it with green beans because it's a nice filler, but it's tasty and they like it. I'm not sure about greens as a whole, probably, but I wouldn't say for sure because I don't know the list. I know there's certain foods that, obviously chocolate, that they cannot eat, but also onions can be toxic to pets and grapes and some things you wouldn't think. So it's always best to get out the old Google and check it out if you're unsure. And have, you know, there's the AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, and they usually have a list on there where you can look and see what's safe for them and what isn't.
I'm just wondering with the, speaking of getting disgusting again, the current push by the Bill Gates and crew to have people eat bugs. Are they putting bugs in dog food or other processed weird things?
I mean, there might be somewhere. I'm sure there's some in there we don't know about, but ideally, like, you know, everything is so processed now, and a lot of the people are going to what they consider a raw diet, and it's basically they're just feeding them ground meat, vegetables, certain things like that. I mean, if you can afford to do that and if you have the time to do that, I would say absolutely it's the way to go. But a lot of people are just not capable of doing that or not able to financially because it can be pricey. If you have a little dog, it's probably not going to be very bad on you. But if you have a lot of big dogs, it may be too costly, but it's going to be better for the dog. Anything that's less processing, obviously, same for them as it is for us. When we eat a bunch of garbage, we feel lousy and we get chunky and we have health issues as opposed to healthier food. It's the same for our animals, too.
Yeah. Now, dogs are mammals. Cats are mammals. We're not that different. You know, are the food requirements that different? I mean, they're both carnivores, you know, dogs and cats. So I don't expect to feed them a lot of, you know, oatmeal and stuff like that. But as far as eating meat and vegetables, why would that not be? I mean, what do they eat in the wild? Do they eat meat? You know, that they catch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and another thing, not a knock against vegans or vegetarians in any way, shape, or form, but I know that there was a movement to have food that didn't have any meat or meat products because of, you know, but they're built for that. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
the predators.
And they were finding that
when they were kids. I mean, did you guys watch Wild Kingdom? The big cats.
Yes,
and
I was traumatized by
eat,
some of those. Absolutely.
Yeah, they eat meat.
Yeah.
Well, some of those things were, they were pretty graphic. That's true. But yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little scary to watch as a kid, but it's like, oh no, these poor animals. But I think they were doing some studies, and, you know, I don't want to quote specifically, but I remember reading that there were health issues with animals on specific foods that did not have certain things. So it's like, you know, it may not be if you want to choose that for yourself, but don't force that upon your pet because that's not how they're geared. So, you know, just talk with your veterinarian about any choice that you decide to make on any food change up or switching to a different diet. Or if you're concerned, I know for a long time it was grain-free was very, it made sense. Why would we want to feed them grain? You know what I mean? Because that's not typical for the diet. So it was getting pushed heavily in for dog food. And then they found out the specific way they do it is causing health issues or could cause heart issues in dogs. So they kind of switched it up. So it's the same thing with people food. You know, like every few years, it's something new that's supposed to be good for you. We're not supposed to be good for you. It used to be you eat several small meals a day, and then now it's intermittent fasting. So, you know, it's the same with the animal world. There's always something different that's supposed to be the latest and greatest.
Intermittent fasting works, by the way. It does for me. So, yeah, that's actually the only thing that's worked. So I've been trying to lose a bit of weight. Mostly after heart surgery, I gained a ridiculous amount of weight, water weight and everything else. So it's stressed, you know, starting a new company. So it was pretty interesting. So Marco in the Netherlands says, bugs and dog food may not be so bad. He says his dog loved catching flies and his cat ate dragonflies. I'm like, oh, I love dragonflies. It's my spirit animal.
Oh,
can't eat dragonflies.
Funny, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But so now they catch the animals, that's okay.
Bugs. For sure.
Yeah, but you don't want the bugs ground up and, you know, like mealworms are not meals. Okay, those will be blood about. Yeah.
That doesn't sound too tasty. But, I mean, dogs will definitely try to eat whatever. It's funny, you'll see, you know, you'll see a dog
and
try to, oh, what's this? Is this a roach or what? Hey, let me check it out. So.
Well, they don't know.
They're just like, whatever. The other day I had a little, and it was deceased when somehow it made it into the house. I had a teeny tiny snake and I don't know if the dog brought it in or if it came into my chute. I have no idea. I was just like, oh my goodness, it's, you know, little. And I felt bad for the little guy, the little teeny guy. But of course, my dog was like, oh, what's this? And trying to check it out. I'm like, no, we're not eating dead snakes today. Thank you.
Well, I mean, some of the live ones are, you know, poisonous. I remember I was on the bike. We have a bike trail here in Milton, Florida, called the Blackwater Trail. Mm-hmm. And I still got a picture of it, but there was about a 6-foot water moccasin sitting in the middle of the trail.
Oh,
and it looked like a stick from a distance. And by the time I got close, and it was like, oh, it's moving. And it was, there really wasn't a place to pull over. It's kind of a narrow pass. Sometimes you have like these big grassy fields, but not where I was. So I rode very fast. I rode right by it, about 2 feet away. You know, the head was at one end, at the other end, and it hissed, and the mouth popped open. That's the whitest mouth I've ever seen. Those cottonmouths are like, wow.
Oh, scary.
And it made a nasty hissing sound. But I was already, by the time it really realized I was there, I was already passing it. So I timidly walked back up because I don't know if they chase people or not, right? Got a nice picture of it. But, you can be surprised by it. I see stories of people with rattlesnakes and things like that. So poisonous snakes and animals. If people live near a river or things like that, that must be a big impact too. They got to be careful of the river critters, you know, coming up and visiting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Lots of, you know, and we see a lot of snakes in our area in Northwest Florida, so that's always something to kind of think about. If your animal is suddenly acting strange or if their face is swollen up, chances mm-hmm. are they might have been, you know, bit by a snake. And if you're able to find out what snake, obviously, because, you know, if it's a poisonous snake, they're going to need antivenom, and they got to know what bit them. But the cottonmouths are very popular around here, obviously, with the rivers and whatnot that we have. And we have seen that from time to time, animals come in with a snake bite. And
yep.
I think one of our employees, if I'm not mistaken, a few years back had that happen, and their dog survived, but they, you know, had to make a couple emergency trips to the vet. It was quite pricey. And it was just, the dog was in the yard and mm-hmm. a snake came up and the dog was like, oh, I'm going to get you. And the snake's like, vet, I got you. So the dog went to the vet, and I don't know if the snake made it or not, but I think he definitely made his mark, literally. So.
Yeah. Especially you see two puncture holes, you go, that looks like a snake. So yeah. And there's a mm-hmm. lot of non-poisonous ones too, but you got to know the difference. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go because we're a little over time already. There's a couple things I want to get to, and we've got, this is going to be a fun show. We're actually bringing back, you know, Friday Gun Day. So I have two gun guests, one at the top of the hour, Candy Petticoat, and then I have John DeMonico, who heads up the Women's Firearm Academy, and that's hysterical. So I'm curious. I was like, dude, how'd you end up running the Women's Firearm Academy? So we're going to find out that too. But that's going to be
Oh, well, neat. That sounds like a good show.
I do my best. I mean, I have my moments. You know, it's amazing how these things work out. This week, if you ever get a chance to go over some of the podcasts, we had Christina Bob, Trump's attorney. She was on Tuesday. And yesterday, we had a great chat with someone I haven't been able to get on the show for a while because he's really busy, Gregory Wright, mm-hmm. the CO2 Coalition, and why carbon dioxide is so good for the environment. And so that's something that it goes against, you know, what everybody's being told now. But
absolutely.
No CO2, no plants, no plants, no animals, no animals, no us. Okay. It's pretty simple. Anyway, so you might want to check that out as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get your contact one more time. And thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tara D. at Santa Rosa County Animal Services. We're at 4451 Pine Forest Road. Tara D. at Santa Rosa County Animal Services. We are at 4451 Pine Forest Road, Milton, Florida. Our phone number is 850-983-4680. You can go to our website at santarosa.fl.gov/animals. Check out our Facebook page or Instagram. Come by the office Monday through Friday, 11:30 till 4:30. Wednesdays, we're open late until 6:30, and Saturdays, 10 until 3:30.
You're so good at this. You're natural. I can't believe you never did radio before. No, I'm serious. No, it's great to have you on, but yeah. But maybe I'll get music for you next time so you can do the closing. Well, it's so funny. Like, take two. Live radio. No problem. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tara.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. I forgot it was live. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Bye now.
Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening.
Ah.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. So I'm back. I've got Marco in the Netherlands on live chat. I've got Pianchi live on the air, and I've got about 20 minutes before our first gun guest gets here. And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if I can take these two, Candy and John, and see if they might be regular gun hosts. But we'll talk about that after I talk to them, neither of whom I've talked to on the air. So it's going to be interesting. So we're going to be kind of winging it this morning, get some new people on. But I want to have a regular gun report, as we had before. We had Shirley Watchful and we had Jim Dykes for, I don't know, a couple of years, especially with Jim. I think about a year of Shirley and about almost 2 years of Jim. And they were fabulous. And so I really enjoyed Friday chats, especially with Jim in terms of the Constitution and laws, and Shirley in terms of women and guns. And so very necessary, I think, to report on some of these things that are happening. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But I wanted to do a story. I've had this for about a week now. Tennessee to consider cutting off federal government funding for education. It's in the Daily Wire. It's by Leif Le Mahieu. That would be M-A-H-I-E-U. It's got to be French. September 26th. So that would be, well, not a week then. I guess it was 3 days ago. Daily Wire. So this is interesting. The idea that Tennessee is actually going to get rid of all their federal funding for education, which means they can do what they want. So the article says Tennessee lawmakers are looking at rejecting federal dollars for public education and replacing them with state dollars in a move that would make Tennessee the first in the nation to turn down federal education funding. Now, you know, nobody wants to turn down, you know, federal money. But the problem is, as the Supreme Court even ruled in an opinion, that if the federal government funds it, they can call the shots. They can, you know, there are strings attached, and that's okay because you're taking their money. And so they get to have control. That's why the federal government to fund everything. And they'll even take our tax dollars to fund things and then still take control of them. That's another story. I've got a very distracting ad on right now. It's a good thing I got it muted. This is terrible. Anyway, it says Republican leadership in the state announced the formation of a panel to look at the impact of federal education funding in Tennessee and the strings that can come attached with that funding. Well, I'll tell you right now, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, critical race theory, stupid stuff, drag queens in your schools. I mean, it just, you know, it just goes on and on and on. You know, a completely dumbed down standard, the 1619 Project, all white people are bad, the country's formed on slavery, and all kinds of other nonsense that the government schools are pushing that have nothing to do with education. So, you know, my applause goes up to Tennessee, but also, I've already contacted two of our legislators here, Michelle Salzman, who is over in Escambia County, which is the one to my left, if you're looking at the beach, you know, back in, or to my right if you're looking from, you know, Alabama down. And Escambia is the first county. When you drive from Alabama into Florida in the panhandle, the first county you get to is Escambia, where the second one, Santa Rosa. And so my Santa Rosa rep, Representative Joel Rubman, also has this same article. So that we're going to find out. Our legislative session starts in January. And so we got plenty of time to get a bill in now. And considering they've already written one, this wouldn't be an Action Radio thing. We don't have to do anything. They've already written it. You know, so I there's a trash truck outside. So if you hear noise, that's what it is. Anyway, the point of all this is that the states, if they want to control their education, they have to take, you know, the federal money out of the system. And I want Florida to do the same thing. I see no reason to take federal money at all, especially with the strings attached. And, you know, we've got a pretty good state budget here. You'll notice the states that don't have an income tax have more money, which is kind of interesting. So the states that don't take federal money have more control. The states that don't have an income tax have more money. Go figure. Anyway, it says here's a quote from one of the folks here, Cameron Sexton, the Republican House Speaker, says, anytime the federal government sends money, there are always
strings attached to those dollars, and there is always a possibility that it opens the state up to other regulations or restrictions. He says this working group will help provide a clearer picture of how much autonomy Tennessee truly has in educating our students. Now, Tennessee is one of the leaders. There's something else they did. I forgot what it was not too long ago. It was a tax thing or something. Tennessee just led the nation. So Tennessee is really good about being innovative, about taking a stand, about protecting their state and doing things that most other states won't do. So they're definitely a trendsetter. Anyway, so Sexton announced on Monday the formation of a 10-member joint working group to look at whether the state can fund education without utilizing federal funds. Now, the panel, which will have members of both its state house and Senate, will have 8 Republicans and 2 Democrats. Well, that sounds about right. Anyways, the quote is, this is from Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally. The education of our youth is one of the essential responsibilities of our government. No, it's not, stupid fool. The education of youth is the responsibility of their parents. And if the parents choose to go to a government school, that's one thing. But this is one of those great myths. You know, well, the government has to educate the kids. No, they don't. That's the problem. And that's what Tennessee – this guy's essentially being contradicting the new Tennessee policy. You know, it was the state government responsibility, but even that's not true. Then he says federal dollars and the various mandates and restrictions that come with those dollars, you know, affect the way Tennessee's children are educated. Or in the case of the federal dollars, not educated or de-educated, or they may dumb down, they may spit. You know, I really, for years of school, I knew less than I did when I was 10 years old. When I got to study on my own, I was reading the World Book Encyclopedia, which I read all, well, I didn't read it all the way through, but I went through all of it by the time I was about 12 years old. And I started when I was about 8. Went through the whole thing. Took a while, you know, a lot of volumes. You know, I just spent Saturday morning, you know, first wake up, I pull out an encyclopedia volume and just start looking through it and find interesting articles and away. You know. Anyway, he says federal dollars and the various mandates and restrictions that come with those dollars. Oh, I already said that. This is due to our state's excellent financial position. This is a worthy subject of examination and study. Okay, that's a big point, too. That is a big point, too. You have to have the money to do this. And a lot of states, the states that charge an income tax, liberal states, they don't have the money. They have to take the federal money. Well, they don't, but they do anyway. But that's an interesting, very interesting thought. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens. Anyway, to Sexton, that's the Speaker of the House, previously discussed turning down $1.8 billion in federal education funding during the last regular legislative session, but the proposal never ended up advancing. Well, it's probably because they had COVID leftovers and things like that. I'm not sure what Tennessee did. I can't imagine they closed down that much in Tennessee. Anyway, he says, we as a state can lead the nation once again. Once again, when did they lead the nation before? Anyway, he says, we in the state, as the state, can lead the nation once again in telling the federal government to pound sand. No, that's what I wish he'd said. Tell the federal government that they can keep their money and we'll just do things the Tennessee way. That's Sexton again. And then he says, and that should start first and foremost with the Department of Education. Yeah. So how many other states will do that? I don't know. I mean, I'm asking my reps here in Florida to do that, to take Florida out of the federal education system. Stop taking, you know, Department of Education money. Don't follow their programs. You know, Florida should educate people the Florida way. Tennessee educates the Tennessee way. let me follow Rush Limbaugh. But Greg, how do they know they're going to be educated to the standards that they should be? Well, what are those standards? The federal government standards? The federal government standards suck. Anyway, I kind of like this idea. Pianki, what do you think?
Well, the courts was wrong in what they ruled, if they ruled like what you said.
Well, I don't think the court said that the federal government funds something, they can attach, you know, the rules to it. They make the rules. If they pay the bill, they make the rules. That's what the court said.
They should only be able to attach the rules to that which they fund. If it's free and reduced lunch, then that's it. They can't go into other areas. And they surely can't dictate the curriculum of a school. That's left up to the local community.
Well, is
local
it though?
District.
If the Department of Education gives all kinds of money, and they say you have to include critical race theory and you know, diversity, education, and inclusion, and teach that white people are bad and the country's founded on slavery, you know, what do they do?
Federal government can't do that. If they contribute for ROTC program, then they can make sure that there's no discrimination going on in that program and things that's blatantly a violation of the law. But they can't tell a school district how to teach. That's up to the state.
See, this is where I'm not clear on it. The reason I'm asking the question is because what the Department of Education does mostly is gives out money that they've already taken from the state.
They give out money for Title IX. That's where females can have extracurricular activity in sports. Mm-hmm. And then they can wander off into areas where they dictate, like, you got to have a transsexual bathroom, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be, you know, if you got a science program, you don't have to worry about no bathroom. But state legislatures have already passed laws that says that the curriculum, textbooks, and instruction material, instruction and training is left up to the district. So the federal government don't get involved in no curriculums.
Yeah, I'm just wondering then why they give out money. You know, why do we have a Department of
districts
education?
Ask for it.
Yeah, but what if the state said, okay, not only are we not going to take the federal money, we're not going to hand over whatever amount that Tennessee was paying to the Department of Education. They keep that money too, so they're not taking
the
federal money.
That,
they're not,
yeah,
that's what I mean. I think that would be part of the bill. And say, okay,
they
can
do that.
Yeah,
but see, here's another point too, Greg.
Uh-huh.
You keep forgetting they have free and reduced lunches. You got poor people in Tennessee that don't have the ability to feed their kids better than what's going on at the school. So they're going to be against that. So it should be detailed to certain things and not no broad blanket. There's two school districts in the state of Missouri, Ladue and Clayton. And about 97% of the monies that run those two school districts, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, comes from the local community. They take hardly nothing from the federal government and very little from the state. And they public school districts.
So that's a good model.
I think
more people, more districts should model themselves on that. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, the thing is that the people in those two districts in the upper echelon of income, so they can afford to pay whatever taxes. And the only reason they have free and reduced lunch because they allow some inner-city kids to come to the district.
How does that help them, though? Say that again?
They allow inner-city kids to come to the district.
Right.
A few. And usually they are in poverty, and the free and reduced lunch helps them.
Well, I'm sure it does. I mean, I'm sure these lunches help, you know, parents that don't have a lot of money, but quite frankly, you know, feeding kids is not the responsibility of the taxpayers or the government. It's the responsibility of the parents, you know, and to have enough kids that you can afford to feed. You know, I don't like the idea of a school breakfast program. I'm not, you know, lunch makes sense because you're already there. I mean, that's part of your school day. But breakfast, dinner, come on. That's crazy. We shouldn't be that should not be a taxpayer-supported thing.
See, actually, the people themselves ask for those programs. Like you make mention dinner, and you're talking about latchkey students.
Right.
A student that had to stay at school after the program because their parents hadn't came home from work. So they were described as being latchkey. So they provided meals for them while they were there waiting on the parents.
Yeah, I know what that's all about. But I used to make my own food as of the age of like 10, but I was unusual. So that's a different story. Yeah, pretty crazy.
So what it should be is that the federal government, if they shouldn't be allowed, and the course was wrong again, and then two, the districts didn't have to pay any attention to the course, but the districts want the money. So that there's a catch-22. But I agree that the federal government need to stay out of public, out of the schools. Especially the public schools, that's where they're at.
Yeah. Well, the best thing would be to what the Republicans have talked about but have never actually done, which is, you know, abolish the Department of Education. They can't seem to do that simple little thing. And this is why I say they're complainers without actually doing anything. But if you didn't have that department, you know, the money, you know, all the money the Department of Education gets comes from taxpayers, and all they do is give, you know, part of it back. It's like a money pool. They take a bunch to fund themselves to keep operating, with all their pensions and perks and benefits and things like that, and their SWAT team, you know, and then they send part of that money back. Well, if it never left the states to begin with, the states would actually have more money. So it makes sense for the states not to take federal money. Just close them down. Anyway, the Democrats
are
all
against
this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They would have to replace some of those programs. Like, you got one federal program that provide, I guess you can say, grants to parents to go toward mm-hmm. the tuition of the school that the kid is going to if they meet certain poverty levels, even in college.
Well, that can be a school choice program.
FIAS.
Yeah, that can
Pardon
be
me?
A school choice program. So that makes sense. And I think
it's not when you're at the college level.
Hmm. Well, college, we need to do something different then. You know, I don't know. School choice for college is, you know, although we think of people over 18 as adults, you know, they still treat college students like kids. It's kind of interesting. You know, a lot of college students don't have the rights of adults outside. Like, college students can't carry guns on campus.
Those funds are available, you know, no matter if you're lower class, middle class, or even I've heard of upper class applying for those funds and they receive them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things they need to be out of, and some mm-hmm. things that you're going to have to come up with a way to replace, because the people are in the habit of being used to it, and it's in their plans for paying for schools, mm-hmm. education.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The Democrats oppose it. Democrats in Tennessee, this is from the article, oppose the move with the state senator Ramesh Akbari. Tennessee, Ramesh Akbari in Tennessee. That's funny to begin with. Anyway, claiming that there would be harsh consequences if Tennessee rejected federal funding. Federal funds are crucial in supporting students with special needs, English language learners, and those from low-income families, Akbari said.
Well, see, English language learners are normally illegals, and they shouldn't be there anyway.
Exactly. And students with special needs? Well, I don't mind a program for students with special needs. But that doesn't have to come out of the regular budget, and that certainly doesn't have to come out of taxpayer money from Tennessee to the federal government and back again. That's just a waste of money.
Well, when you get in Missouri, in St. Louis area, they got what's called a special school district, and they are for kids that can't be taught in the classroom because of their disabilities or handicap. So they have a school district especially for them, where they can receive the needs that they need. You know, they may be in wheelchair bound, so when time comes, or they may be in a bed, really. Sometimes they wheel a bed in with a student in so that they can pick up their language, their education. But now they got different means like Zoom and so forth. So, you know, you got to tend to them too.
I'm still fascinated by Ramesh Akbari from Tennessee. doesn't sound like a typical redneck to me, but he's Democrat, so that's okay.
Yeah, you know that guy there is. Democrats. Remember this: that the teachers' unions are mm-hmm. one of the contributors to the Democratic candidates.
Oh yes.
Okay, and teachers, they are not bound to be paid, or the performance of the product that they're in front of is not dependent. Their salary isn't dependent on that. Their compensation is not dependent on that. So whether the child is failing or whether the child is doing well, it means no difference to the teacher. They still got their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then those,
so they can be,
they take that money and contribute to the teachers union through dues, and teachers union turn around and contribute to candidates and all sorts of things.
Yeah. And it's all contracted, so the contract amount, because teachers are under union contract, so the dues are automatic. The contract is automatic. They can be the worst teacher in the world, but make as much as the best teacher in the world, because it's all the same contract, you know, or mm-hmm. the folks that are within that collective bargaining unit. But here's what Ramesh Akbari from Tennessee said that federal funds are crucial in supporting students with special needs, English language learners, and those from low-income families. Well, you know, low-income families can get vouchers. And then it says Tennessee has established itself as one of the more conservative states in the country. That's not Ramesh. That's just the article. Moving to ban sex change procedures on minors. That's a good thing. Moving to protect children from sexually explicit performances. That's another good thing. Well, that's what it was. And overwhelmingly rejecting proposed, quote, red flag legislation in the past year, despite heavy pressure from left-wing activist groups. So Tennessee's a good place. Okay, so here's what Tennessee did. Now I remember what it was. This is fascinating. So rather than just ban the drag queen shows, they classified them as adult entertainment. You know, the same as strippers, which is what it is. If you're doing a drag queen show, you know, you're adult entertainment. Well, you can't have adult entertainment in the schools because they don't have adults. They have minors. So Tennessee actually did a really smart thing. I think it was struck down by some left-wing lunatic court or something like that. But that's how they did it. So Tennessee's pretty smart. So it sounds like, you know, it actually sounds like a bad thing the way the Daily Wire writes this, but it's actually a good thing. Tennessee has established itself as one of the more conservative states in the country. Well, I would say more conservative or more American. This sounds like American values. Moving to ban sex change procedures on minors, that's a good thing. Moving to protect children.
Well, Louisiana done that too.
That's a good thing. Yeah, exactly. And overwhelmingly rejecting red flag laws. Tennessee is the bomb. Tennessee's that's the place to be. I mean, they got it right. We should learn from Tennessee.
Yeah, that's the South. Now, when you start creeping up to the North, when you get up about Illinois, Indiana, and especially Michigan and Minnesota, those things change. Those people.
Well, see, now here's something I haven't really talked about on the show. I came to this area purposefully. The fact that I found a radio station, WBY 1330 AM in Milton, Florida, a place I'd never heard of, for my first full-time radio job, was not an accident. I mean, I looked in this area. I really wanted to live in the South. Didn't have to be. I was hoping for Florida, but it didn't have to be. I just wanted to get out of California. And so the fact that I found a radio station exactly the place I wanted to be in, and there was another station in town, you know, Cat Country 1620, which is the ones I talked to them about working too. And I said, this is the one station I never want to work at. These people, they don't agree with me at all. They'll never accept Action Radio. But this other station, you know, half an hour away, this is the perfect station. So it's just ironic that the station that I didn't want to have anything to do with ends up buying the station that I absolutely loved and kicked us all out of a job. It's just one of those funny things, one of those little ironies of history. But anyway, but radio, it is fascinating that the South, one of the reasons I wanted to come here is the South is going to save this country. And the South is independent enough. The South was independent enough to take on the federal government, the Civil War. Now, the reasons were wrong, but the fact is only the South, of all the regions of this country, New England didn't do it. You know, New York, Pennsylvania didn't do it. The Midwest didn't do it. You know, Texas didn't do it, although they probably would have. The Northwest and the Southwest didn't do it. The South did. The South took on the federal
their
government.
Reason, there wasn't nothing wrong with their reasons.
Slavery was wrong. Yeah.
Well, slavery was the law. Right or wrong is one. See, where it came from, it was right. It wasn't wrong. See, that's what we try to put these sentiments in something that happened 4, 5, 6, 7, been going on forever. You can't do that. You can't go into other countries and use your sentiment where you're coming from and apply them. Don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a
no,
good
that's
reason.
Why
it now, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them are South. Southern states are signed on to the Convention of States, by the way.
I believe it. Well, the South is independent.
And those
you know, like
people,
I say, the South, you know, because the South didn't want the taxes of the North. They didn't want the industrial North dictating how the South would live. The South was, you know, agriculture-based.
Absolutely.
And so the trade, the North was blocking the South from trade with Europe for agriculture down here. You know, so there are a lot of reasons that go way beyond slavery. I just mentioned that as the reason everybody thinks of the Civil War, and it's really not. But this is why I think the South is going to save this country, is because that same independent spirit, you know, directed towards America first as compared to the rest of the country, which is, you know, globalist first. The South, I really wanted to be in the South, you know, for the reason that
well, you're in a good place.
Yeah, but I think the people here are independent enough. Well, I couldn't do the show in California, and I'd be lynched. I'd be hanging from the tree out front, you know, of my former, you know, house that I was in. You know, we used to have protests outside my window. I had an elementary school two blocks up the street, and they would march. The teachers would have the kids march down the street behind a Mexican flag. That was bad enough, you know, chanting all kinds of things.
You can't do that in Mexico.
What, march behind an American flag?
You can't march in the streets with a foreign flag against the Constitution.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. I actually wrote an article that we should burn the Mexican flag on Flag Day. I haven't released that one yet. That was a little more controversial than my usual. Anyway, so I'm expecting a phone call here from Candy Petticord, who's another woman in guns advocate, competitor, and things like that. So hopefully she's got her two sons right. Otherwise, she's going to conflict with my other person. But that's I should send a quick message. You know, like, you're on. So let me just do a quick message here. You are on. Put time to call in. Time to call in. Let's see if this works. People do that sometimes, especially first-time callers, or they'll call my cell phone. This is why I don't get my cell phone number out very often. But that happens. So we'll see. We'll see where my guests went. So we've got two interesting guests. Now, Candy Petticard, she is a gun rights person.
Is Derek in today?
Derek's not in today. No, he would have been in already. So he was at 7:30, so he's not in today. That's why I covered the education thing. So I might have to vamp this hour, too. But she had all kinds
of
stuff.
It would be nice if your guests leave contact information, because somebody from in the area don't know who they are. They need to contact them.
I always ask.
So
I always ask for contact information, and I always and I tell people, too, that, of course, everything here is podcast. What's that?
If they're business, and give a telephone number, this shelter, and give an address and a telephone number.
Oh, she does. Tara does it twice. Yeah. She does it at the beginning of the report and the end of the report. Tara's really good about that. And again, everything's podcast. Well, that's why I made that promotional thing that I do now. My contact information, I put everything in one place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than kind of, I used to give it at the end of the show kind of scattered, but now I have something organized that I play at the beginning and I actually list it on the schedule. So it looks like it's you and me for this hour. I don't know where my guest is, but that's okay. That happens. Stuff happens. People get busy. You know, dog has to go to the vet. Who knows? But we have another one, John Delmonico. He's in the 9 o'clock hour, so that'll be the top of the next hour. So here's a guy that runs the Women's Firearm Academy. So it's kind of a funny story, actually, because when I emailed, he just went with his letter, his initials, JD. And I'm thinking, you know, Jane, Juliet, you know, I'm thinking a chick, right, running the Women's Firearm Academy. And this guy writes back, yeah, hey, it's John. I said, what? I said, you're a dude. He says, yes, I am. This is pretty funny. I said, well, how'd you get to run a Women's Firearm Academy? It's actually an interesting story. So we're going to find out about that. But we need to go on Friday.
Conservative people need to do the things that help their movement. Like yesterday, I got rid of my phone service and went to a conservative carrier.
Huh.
And the one reason I got rid of the other one, because they was headquartered in New York, also tied in with D.C., and you know what that means. So I say, the hell with you. There's no need for us to talk about the things that we know that the nation need, but we turn around when the conversation is over, and we're supporting those entities that's anti-American and especially anti-Trump. I just don't want to say that.
Yeah,
but,
well, that's why I have that's why I do Forgive Send Go. Yeah, that's why I have people. I took out my PayPal for the schedule. You'll notice if you want to donate, I just left the Give Send Go one because Give Send Go is a lot better than PayPal. And so PayPal does not support Americans, does not support guns, does not support a bunch of things. So now, if anybody wants to contribute, Give Send Go, givesendgo.com/actionradio.
I called my current carrier and got customer service. I had to call them 3 times because I couldn't understand what the person was saying. I called this new company, and immediately I knew what they were saying because they was American. They advertised that they are Americans.
Do you want to tell which company it is? Is it like Patriot Mobile or something?
It's Pure Talk.
Okay. Well, so I don't mind plugging them. Hey, if you like them, talk to them. See if they'll sponsor us. You never know. I'll have them
Pure
on the show.
Talk.
Yeah. Well, let me do another article because I think it's just us for a bit. And this is one that I had like several articles.
There now.
No, in fact, as soon as I said that, my guest appears. So let's bring her on here. And I don't have a whole lot of theme stuff here. So Candy Petticard, there you are. Welcome to Action Radio.
Here I are. Oh,
yeah,
thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I was hoping you'd call in. We sort of missed you at the top of the hour, but that's okay. Pianki and I have been kind of vamping a little bit. So that's okay. So yeah, this is gonna be fun because we've never talked. We messaged a little bit, and it was kind of like last minute. Like, are you coming on tomorrow? Yeah, I'm coming on tomorrow. Okay, fine. But you're a gun person, and so we need to we have a Friday tradition of guns around here. And so I want to find out what your story is. And so there's no real format. It's pretty freewheeling where we just kind of improv here and do all kinds of things. But if you have background noise, you know, we might want to watch that just because the mic picks up everything. And so the dog barks and things happen.
Okay.
That's kind of a normal thing around here. So let me first of all, scroll down here a little bit. Let's give you a round of applause for being here. Whoops, let me get the full one. There we go, that's better. So you're kind of following a tradition. We have a lot of women firearms advocates. We had Shirley Watchell, DC Project, on for about a year. We've had Amanda Suffolkel. We've had Cheryl Todd. We've had Tess Saab, however you pronounce her name. We've had a bunch of different folks on here. There's one woman from New Zealand who stayed the whole 3 hours. I forgot who brought her on, but she just stuck around. It was kind of funny. So what's your story? So were you born loving guns, or something that happened later in life? And what's your story?
So my story is I did not grow up loving guns. As a matter of fact, guns were not a part of my family, not a part of my upbringing, not really even a part of my culture. I am a black firearms instructor, and in my culture, the only people who had guns were drug dealers or pimps or criminals. And it seemed like the other segregations of the population just didn't have guns. We just didn't have them because we lived in the city. It wasn't like we were hunters or anything like that. So they just were not a part of our culture.
You say our culture.
I got into them.
I'm kind of curious just to, you know, I pick up on words a lot. When you say what do you mean by your culture? I think like American culture, or is this Black American culture, or what are you talking about? And you can be blunt here too. We're very open in the way we discuss things, so you know.
Okay,
cool. So feel free.
Then
yeah.
I like that. So
okay.
What I mean by culture is the politically correct way of saying that's not the way I was brought up.
Oh, so the leftist culture
is
what we're talking about. We're talking about socialist, democratic, Marxist, communist, un-American, globalist, take your guns away people, that culture.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Okay, good. Yeah, so you're among friends here. So, yeah. Okay, now I understand.
So when I was growing up, like I said, it's not that we were anti-guns. It's not that we were pro-guns. We just... Guns just didn't exist. They just weren't there. They weren't a part of our everyday life. And I really didn't get into firearms until about 6 or 7 years ago. And that was about the time my kids started becoming of age. And I started realizing that we were no longer in Mayberry anymore. And that Mayberry was never coming back. I know, right?
Yeah.
And that the world is actually a pretty crappy place sometimes.
Huh.
And I'm a definite mama bear. And my thought is, man, if anyone was to ever do anything to one of my kids, I would. And I didn't have an answer for the I would. Because you can be as mad as you want to be.
Interesting.
But if you don't have skills, you don't have training, you don't have some kind of plan, all you have is anger, and that's not me. I'm a person of action. So my thought was, you know what? The great equalizer, especially for women, is a firearm. So that started me down my path.
Yeah, I have a great interest in women and firearms, and this is why I have a lot of women and firearms on, just because I think in a lot of ways women can really advance our Second Amendment rights against the left. Because if, you know, Billy Bob the redneck with the rifle in the truck in the pickup starts coming out and I'll do my, you know, say, well, Billy Bob comes out here and talks about rifles. I got my guns, I got my dog, I'm going to go hunting. You know, that's Second Amendment right. That's my right. What are you talking about? You know, it's a different story. And if I'm, okay, my apologies to my redneck brethren. But, you know, if you come out, you know, as a mother, you know, especially if you bring the kids, well, they're young kids, all right, and, you know, that's an entirely different message and a much more powerful one, especially the left who deals with emotions anyway. They don't care about facts, you know.
No, they do not.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and you brought that up. Not only am I a mother, but I'm a black mother, and mm-hmm. I'm a middle-aged mother. So mm-hmm. I'm not a youngster. I'm not someone who's just, you know, just fell off the bus and it's like, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. No, I'm someone who's had time to look around, absorb yeah. what's going on, decide I'm not too happy about this, yeah. and take my little step to protect me and mine.
Were you in can you tell me what city you're in? I'm just curious as to where in the country this was, because that makes a difference.
I'm in an inner city in Ohio.
Okay. All right. Is this a city that was victimized by Black Lives Matter and or Antifa riots in the last couple of years?
They sure tried it, but to our credit, to the credit of our mayor, who uh-huh. is Democratic,
oh.
he is a Democratic mayor, but I was really proud of him because it was either his police commissioner or his police chief gave him a hint about a gut feeling that he had. And instead of ignoring this information, our mayor was on top of it. And he was just like, nah, fam, we ain't having that mess here. So it did
Democrat
not
mayor.
Happen. They planned it, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Black Democrat mayor by chance? Or no?
No. Nope.
Huh. This is still a message for Democrats out there that you don't, you know, have to be so progressive that you let your city be destroyed by rioters. And these,
correct.
You know, I mean, rioters are rioters. I don't care what the politics of it is, you know, and this is, wait, are you making breakfast? I hear like things in the background.
I'm sorry.
Don't
yes,
be sorry. It's fine.
I'm here at home with my kids, so I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. The reason I tell you that is because, like, Jonathan Mosley, who does our legal report, was on Mondays. He was making coffee, you know, right during his report. And people forget because it gets so casual with me, right? And so he's making coffee, and I'm hearing the water, you know, slush around the coffee maker. And I said, Jonathan, what are you doing? He's making coffee. Can you hear it? He said, yeah, I can hear everything. You know, that's normal right here. Okay, so this is really interesting.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I'll make you jealous. I'll make you really
Uh-oh.
Jealous. My
oh,
son
no.
just
you...
made me a breakfast of Uh-oh. Bacon and a ridiculous omelet with onions and cheese. And, oh, my gosh, it's amazing.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah,
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah. I'm so hungry. I eat twice, once at like 4 a.m. when I get up before the show and then after the show. So you caught me hungry. Do you know this reminds me of Pianki? Remember, Pianki's on the line too. Do you remember when Alan Dawson used to call in from Belize and he'd have like these tropical, you know, gourmet delights, and Pianki always asked what he had. So what do you think of Candy's omelet there, Pianki? We're a little off topic, but I don't care.
Well, she took a picture of it.
Oh, I know. I should have done that.
Yeah,
Next time I'll do that because we need to get food.
Yeah, go ahead, Pianki.
I wanted to tell her one thing. There's about 42, when I counted, black gun clubs across the nation, and about three of them, we shoot Foxy Mamas, and I can't think of the other. About three of them are all female, black female.
Very nice. That's
yes.
awesome.
Are you connected with either other black gun groups or black women gun groups? Just curious.
I am not, because I just recently started this, recently as in within the last couple of years.
Okay.
So I have not made those connections yet, but I am connecting more with black 2A advocates and black firearms instructors, and I am actually in the process of setting up a black course in my community for youth, a black firearm safety course for the youth in our community.
Interesting. Do you have a large black population in your town or city?
Very much so.
Okay.
We're multiracial, but
right.
yes. We do have a large minority population in our community.
Well,
and
then it's the majority. Like if a town is 70% black, you know, it's fascinating when a town says, well, we're 70% black, you know, we're 70% minority. I said, no, that's the majority at that point. It's like the white folks are the minority, which,
well, you know,
perception is everything, right? Yeah, anyway, go ahead, Bianchi.
This is one of my special topics. Now, the reason why she's doing that is because black females are not involved in an activity that they should be involved in, that's self-protection, gun safety, and when to shoot and when not to shoot. And that's something that many try to get involved in, and it's coming along pretty well. When I go to the firing range, it's mostly women. And when I was a kid, I used to carry my .22 bolt action carbine on my shoulder with a strap, get on the bus, ride to school. We have gun practice after school, get on the bus, go back home. And
which decade was this?
A long time ago.
I'm just saying, which decade?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they used to do it in New York. I mean, there are pictures of kids. The gun groups have showed us. I think in like the 40s and 50s, you know, kids would ride the subway in New York, and because a lot of the schools had a rifle range in the basement, you know, with hearing protection and the ventilation, all that kind of stuff. So they would do that. Ohio, did you have a similar thing like that?
Honestly, I can't. When I grew up, I went to a private school. So we have that, but I can't comment on what the public schools had because I didn't attend them. I attended a private school, and
well,
we did have that. We had archery and riflery and all that good stuff, but I never took advantage of that. It just never appealed to me. It was available, but it never appealed to me, so I took other things.
Something changed. Okay, so is there an event that changed your life or a gradual evolution? I'm guessing there was an event. Something put you on this path. Would I be right? And if it's personal, you don't have to tell me. I'm just nosy.
Love it. Yes, there was an event. It did not happen to me. It happened to someone I know.
Okay.
And in a nutshell, there was a home invasion. Her husband was at work doing what the provider is supposed to be doing.
Right.
But while he was gone, the wife got hit, and she had to literally watch her two teenage daughters get assaulted.
Wow.
And, yeah, you can imagine how that went.
Oh,
now messed up. You know, the daughters are now messed up. The mom is messed up. And the dad is messed up because he was out doing what he was supposed to be doing, but he wasn't there to protect his family.
Well, he's still got guilt.
So,
he's going to have guilt the rest of his life,
yes,
even though the rational side says there's nothing he could have done. He wasn't there. He didn't know she couldn't call. But on the other hand, he always wishes that he could have been there to do something. But again, guns in the house. You know, this is huge. And so the reason I ask is, I remember, you know, and I grew up in a socialist, Marxist, you know, left-wing, ultra-feminist family, you know, and that was, you know, so guns, you couldn't even talk about guns in my house. You know, I had little cap guns when I was a kid, but even that was unusual, all right? And so guns were, you know, in fact, at summer camp, I wanted to take the rifle course because I actually was interested in guns because I was interested in airplanes and loud things and rock and roll and all kinds of things that I couldn't do at home that I did later in life. But that was my experience growing up. And then when I got married, I got real protective, and there were a couple of murders on my street. So it's a similar thing. So then I thought I was against guns, but I wanted to learn because, you know, I'm a married guy. I want to protect, you know, the wife and the future kids. And so I learned about them. But here's what I found out. And I want this to happen to you too, that not only was I good at it, I really loved it. And all of a sudden,
I know,
you know,
right?
Okay, so go ahead. So I see we have parallel lives here. So go ahead, tell me your story. This is interesting.
Oh, my gosh, yes. So so pretty much that was it. This happened to my friend. And then, again, like I said, you've got that mama bear mode that so help me God, if anyone did anything to one of my kids, I would. And then there was this huge ellipsis after it. It's like, I would do nothing because I don't know how to do anything. I mean, I can John Wick in my head all I want, but the truth of the matter is I had no clue how to do anything. And that was just a huge wake-up call for me that I could not protect my family. And my husband, whom I love with every fiber of my being, I will be honest and tell you he is the proverbial lover, not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's okay.
If the crap's going to hit the fan, the kids know, call mom.
Call Mama Bear.
Yes,
Papa Bear's a great guy,
Bear,
but that's really interesting. It's something I've never thought of, because we men are supposed to be the natural protectors. Now, I am extremely protective. You know, I look nerdy as hell. I mean, I'm not the image of what you would think of as a tough guy, for example. But I've got swords and knives, guns, and I used to do 1,000-yard rifle competitions. So I'm pretty deadly about 600 yards completely. I was very accurate to 600. I haven't hunted. I want to do that at some point, but for targets, 600 yards, no problem. 800 yards, pretty good. 1,000 yards, that's where they separate the beginners from the experts. That 1,000 yards, for some reason, that last couple hundred yards, that the wind takes over the drop and everything else like that. But when you start shooting long range, when you can reach out and, if had to, touch someone at 600 to 800 yards, that's a powerful feeling. And then when I started competing, I went IDPA, IPSC, I did a bunch of different things. I like IDPA because it was more realistic. That's the International Defensive Pistol Association, where you're shooting from cover. You're shooting regular guns, not the tricked out weird ones that usually don't work because they're, it's like that race
because
car that you have.
Because they're tricked out and weird.
They're weird, yeah. The engineers, hey, look, you take a basic Glock or a basic .45, 1911 style. It's been around for 100 years. well, the Glock's not so much, but they work. The engineers spend a lot of time making work. Don't fuss with them. They work fine. Shoot them out of the box. Yeah. Pianki, did you have a comment? I thought I heard you wanted to get in here.
Yeah, another thing, too, is that women should wear their gun. Even if it's a fashion statement and they're just wearing a holster. They should have the gun on their hip. Mm-hmm. They should have a stack barrel Derringer in their bra. And they should have a 6-inch hat pin in their hair.
Jackie's pretty direct, too.
Yeah. And, here's another thing, too. The NRA has a program that's designed for young kids. It's called Eddie Eagle. And that's something you might want to look up. You already know about it?
Yes, sir. I already teach it.
That's good. That's good. And, state legislatures usually have, and they're going to say a fund, whereas a school can get money to order the material, which is coloring books and other things that is attracted to the attention of young kids, whereas they can learn why they're doing coloring books and so forth and so on. But that's a marvelous program, and it's well served for the community.
I agree. It's a phenomenal program. And What I always find so funny is when people are reluctant to introduce firearms and firearm safety to kids, they're like, well, you're bringing guns into the picture, and we don't want to introduce them to guns, and we don't want guns around them. And I so want to tell them, guys, the guns are out there. They're everywhere.
They're already there. Yeah.
They're already there. So I'm sorry, you're living in a fantasy world if you think me coming into the classroom with firearms is the first your kids will ever see of guns. I can almost promise you it's not.
Well, that's part of the reason I taught my daughter to shoot at 8 years old, because I knew she was going to go to friends, and those friends' parents are going to have guns. I don't know if they're as careful as I am. And I wanted her to know, if she ever saw one, what to do. Leave it, go get an adult. I mean, that's the basic plan.
Exactly.
But she knew about guns so much she was bored with them. Okay, Dad, I don't want to see the guns anymore. Okay, good. That's a good reaction. I'm happy with that. So she had no curiosity, because I already taught her, and she was good at it, too. but kids, they need this in school. It should almost be a requirement, especially in this country, to because it is such a tradition, and the guns are out there, that kids really need to have a gun safety course as part of the regular school in junior high, probably junior high, actually. I was flying airplanes at 16, so why wouldn't kids learn about guns? Anyway, go ahead.
It's funny you said that, because I have the same thing here at my house. I'm not sure if you know, but I actually have 12 kids. And all of my
congratulations.
Kids,
yeah.
Why, thank you.
You got an army.
And
you got your own
my
army.
Kids, yes, I do. I did that on purpose. Absolutely.
Interesting.
So all of my kids, we have firearms. We use firearms on the regular. We go to the range, we train together, we shoot together. And like you said, it's almost to the point of, I won't say boredom, but my kids understand that a firearm is simply a tool, no
right.
different than a fork or a broom or a hammer or whatever. It's a tool that you use for a specific need, whether that need is trap shooting, whether that need is a day at the range, or whether that need is protecting your little sister or your younger brother or your mom. There's a need for that tool, but if there's no need for that tool, it's where it is and it stays there until it's needed.
Do you guys all have T-shirts when you go shooting, like the same one, you know, Petticord Troop or a Troop Petticord or something like that?
Something like that. We actually have a shirt that it says Petta Peeps on it. And you know Peeps, the little marshmallow peep?
That's okay. Yeah.
You don't know what? Oh, my gosh. You need to Google marshmallow peep.
I'll write it down.
Somebody on the planet who doesn't know what a peep is, for crying out loud.
I know what a peep is. I don't know what a marshmallow peep is. I mean, you know, give me a little credit.
Oh, you got to look that up. You got to look that up.
I'm writing it down.
But we have shirts that says Petticord Peeps, because I always call my kids my peeps. And we
right.
have T-shirts that has a separate peep, and it's got each kid's name on it. And
oh,
then
God.
There are two big bunny peeps for me and my husband.
Oh, wow. You should form like a rifle team or I can just see you doing like single action shooting, you know, the cowboy action shooting. You know, y'all get out there.
Oh,
now it's time for us to get out in the range. Here we go. Yeah. You know, John Wayne. This would be fun.
Come on, y'all. We go into the range.
Yeah. See, you have to work on your John Wayne accents. That'd be kind of fun. Yeah. Anyway, something that Pianki brought up earlier that's a really important point, I think, and that is the open carry of firearms. Both Pianki and I believe that the normalization of the sight of guns on people, especially mothers. You know, we have a problem in Florida now where you can't carry a gun if you're between 18 and 21. And like, what about the 19-year-old single moms? You mean they can't carry a gun? Are you crazy? You know, and so there's some laws that need changing, and that's what we do here. That's the whole point of Action Radio, is that we're not just a radio show, we're actually our citizen legislature. And so we go directly into things. I post a couple of our bills on your Facebook Messenger, which you can read at your leisure, and we're going to be talking. Yeah, I expect to hear a lot from you on the show, so I'm kind of happy with the way this is working out. But wouldn't, you know, that is one of the most important things. Now, do you have open carry in Ohio or no? Or is it just constitutional or not even that? You do have open carry.
We have constitutional and we have open carry. We have both.
Well, constitutional is open carry, if I may differ with you slightly. They tried that nonsense here in Florida. They said, well, we're giving you without a permit. That's constitutional carry. I said, no, it's not. I said, and we even have Florida Carry, which is a good organization. I said, no, it's only constitutional if it's open carry. The Constitution does not make a distinction between carrying in the home and carrying outside the home. It doesn't make a distinction between, you know, permit and non-permit. And it doesn't make a distinction between carrying openly, you know, or carrying concealed. None of those things apply to the Second Amendment. So the only constitutional carry that I recognize is full, open or concealed, no permit, carry where you want. It's an absolute right, you know, to keep and bear arms. Make sense?
I will agree with that. Yeah,
okay, good.
Absolutely.
That was easy. Do you carry openly?
Yep.
You can tell me or not. Your choice.
I do not. Simply because of where I live.
Tell me why. I'm curious.
Because, I'll happily tell you. Because
okay.
I feel it makes me an unnecessary target.
Why is that?
Because for me, carrying concealed gives me an element of surprise. I am, like I said, I'm a middle-aged black woman. I'm
mm-hmm.
kind of fluffy, so I don't necessarily, I know, did you like that?
That's a great description. Hey, listen, I'm an old white guy, I would do it. So, you know.
Well, but for me, I don't look like the person I am. And I use that to
neither
my
do
advantage. I
look like a
look
California
like
hippie.
Somebody who could smoke you
yeah.
very quickly. Yeah. If you bother me, I don't look like that kind of person, and I like it that way. I don't like drawing attention to
you
myself.
You guys got me cracking up.
We're having a great time. I've already decided I want Candy for a regular reporter, so we'll talk about that off the air sometime. You're already in if you want to do it. This is too much fun. Yeah, exactly. See how easy this is? I make command decisions really fast around here, so I'm usually right. But I think open carry.
I agree with her, Greg,
ahead.
Because I've seen videos where people come up behind someone and snatch the gun out and run with it.
Yep.
But
yep.
And so that is it just depends. And then I've been in Texas where people wear their guns just like they did in back in the 1800s. But
yep.
What I was going to ask her, do you have participants in a league, like a bowling league, but you have a gun league, everybody meet up and have, you know, contests amongst each other for target practice there in the gun range? Do you have things like that?
Yes. Actually, yes, I do. I am a chapter facilitator for 3 chapters of A Girl and a Gun.
Well, that's great. Now, and before you leave, make sure you give your contact on your information if it's available for the public.
We'll do it now, and then we'll
Absolutely.
Do it again at the top
I'd
of the hour.
To.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it now, and then we'll do it again at the top of the hour.
Okay, so I am Candy Petticord, and I am a chapter facilitator for A Girl and a Gun, Stark and Summit, Ohio, Akron, Ohio, and North Coast, Ohio. Those are my 3 chapters. Mm-hmm. And you can reach me at Candy P, AGAG Akron, at gmail.com.
Yeah, send it to me a messenger too, because I'll be emailing you some stuff. This is very interesting. So
Absolutely.
this strikes me as a very traditionally white area of Ohio. I would think Akron, you know, the old Akron, the tire companies, the other stuff. This is old style middle America. You're in the, I don't know if it's like the Rust Belt now or what it is, but it sounds, but maybe it's changing. You know, I actually drove through Akron when I moved to California, but that was back in 1984. So this is a long time ago. Has it changed much in this area?
It has changed. Yes, it has changed substantially, and unfortunately not for the better.
Do you have a gang problem?
Yeah.
Okay. How's your illegal alien population?
Probably high.
Okay. Because we have... different bills. One of them is civil asset forfeiture. And so this is where your county sheriff could literally just seize any property of any illegal alien, not because it's an immigration issue, but because it's a criminal issue. They're in the country illegally. And so if you wanted to look into that, there's a lot of things we can do in terms of legislation that might help. And gun people are activists, you know, especially female gun people. Especially as I'm learning, black female gun people are extremely active, just because it's not expected. Well, how's your family treat you with all this? What are they thinking? Well, what's Candy done this time?
Oh my gosh,
she always was a little
it.
Crazy. Oh, they do love it. Okay, good.
Yeah, pretty much. They love it. They absolutely love it. And I have I am not a Facebook person, but because I'm a part of A Girl and a Gun, I must have a Facebook presence.
Right.
Which has actually ended up benefiting me because my family now knows what I do and they cheer me on. They're ecstatic. And I found out there are members of my family who were part of Secret Service, who were part of the FBI, who were law enforcement, and we never knew it. We never knew it.
So they've come out of the closet,
cool.
So to speak? They've come out of the law enforcement closet?
Very much so. They're like, you know what? If she can come out, we can come out.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, they could actually help a lot, too, because, you know, federal firearms training is pretty good. Some of their understanding of the Constitution is a little lacking. But as far as actual gun training, I was briefly a customs agent. After 9/11, they had this program, this 9-week wonder program, because they really needed customs inspectors like right now. And apparently, I was 42, so I was too old to be an agent. This is like, you know, over 20 years ago. But I could be an inspector, And it was great for a while. Then they told me I was too old. And they said, well, the job for you is going to be stamping passports, and that's the rest of your career because you're too old for anything else. I'm like, I don't think so. So I gave them a few months, and they refused to move me anywhere else, and I ended up leaving. But the firearms training, I qualified as distinguished expert on the pistol. You know, I was one of the few that actually in our paintball simulation, I actually took out the instructor with paintballs. So, you know, and Army Rangers were getting, you know, shot in the face. You know, I'm like, you know, here I was, you know, 42 and not the fastest person in the world, but I was smarter and I used cover better. And so there's you don't have to be the biggest, baddest, fastest person out there. You got to be the smartest. And that, I don't know if you teach that with guns at all, use of cover, things like that. How does that apply for people that are not?
I absolutely do.
Yeah. Tell me.
Well, I absolutely do because let's say my son Michael, for example. Michael is extremely fast. He's a young man. He draws quickly. He's accurate as a pinhead. I mean, he's amazing, but he's also a young guy. Then we have my daughter Abby, who is not as fast, but she is as accurate as they come. I mean, Abby will smoke you. There's no doubt about it.
Do your kids know they're going on worldwide radio? I just want to let you know that we are heard in Cuba and Vietnam and you know, Iceland and Argentina and a bunch of other places
That's
around
awesome.
The world. So yeah, it is. So just
That's awesome.
I always like to say that just so the kids, their names are going to be up there too now. So it's just a little disclaimer.
Now,
go ahead, Pianki.
Now, what about a concealed carry insurance? How do you? And let me say this, you are very unique. You have 12 children. And see, Greg, when I was coming up, it wasn't unusual to find a mother that had, you know, 8, 9 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady here is very unique in her conservatism because that is the picture of America. It really is, that I remember. But getting back to it, how do you provide, make sure that you got the insurance for your yourself and remind others that in case that something do happen, that we know that this type of society that we live in today, and they have to have their protection. It's not that expensive, but it's needed protection anyway.
Yes, I absolutely do. I have insurance for myself. All my kids who carry have insurance. My husband carries. He has insurance. I'm big on that because, God forbid, that awful day happens, you need to know that you've got that legal backup. You've got to have it.
Yeah, interesting. So you think Candy's unique? I mean, aren't there just tons of, black female, 12-kid, gun-owning, instructing women out there? I mean, you know, conservatives? This is America, right?
You're on every corner, man.
You must be everywhere. Yeah, exactly. This is hysterical. I don't know where to go from here. I'm having way too much fun with this. But
I know, right?
Exactly. Competition. I find competition, and I'm very competitive, but I'm not usually very good. You know, I was never going to be an Olympic pole vaulter, for example, because athletically I'm terrible. I just love doing it. I love playing tennis, never, hardly ever won a game, didn't care. But competition with firearms made me so much better. You know, a little bit of stress, the idea of competing, when I was competing against the Army Rangers at the 1,000 yards, they won every time. I didn't care. I just like being out there, and I got pretty good and surprised
a few
times.
Right, you just like doing it.
But, but the idea of competition, see, one of the biggest problems, I think, with firearm shooters is they stand there passively shooting at a paper target that doesn't move. There's no stress. There's no use of cover. They're out there in the open. And they're taking their time squeezing the shot off. But in a real defensive situation, that is as far from realistic as it gets. And so competition is one of the safest ways to get a little bit of stress, get some time, and there's a risk, if you pull that trigger too early, got to keep your finger on the side of the gun, where all the things that you talk about in gun safety actually come into play. You really have to follow the rules.
Yeah.
Otherwise, A, you'll be disqualified, but B, you can shoot yourself in the foot or worse. You could do some things, but you need that stress because in a real defensive situation, that stress is going to be 1,000 times stronger. That adrenaline is going to be 1,000 times higher in your system. And if you don't have any kind of discipline that you haven't at least competed, you're missing something in your training, I think.
Correct. And that is one of the things that I really stress with my ladies. I stress for them to at least try competition shooting, because in the gun world, especially for newer shooters, they tend to see shooting in two different camps. There's competitive shooting and there's defensive shooting, and there's two different camps. And what I try to make them understand is, no, they're actually not. They're one and the same, because the skills that you learn when you shoot competitively are also the exact same skills that you want to have mastered if you are ever caught in a defensive situation. You need to move. You need to be behind cover. You need to recognize the difference between cover and concealment. You
what
may
is the
be
difference?
In
let's,
and
let's talk about that, because that's really important.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to assume you don't know. So concealment is exactly what it says. Concealment is going behind something, under something, whatever, that is hiding you from someone who is attempting to cause you harm. However, that concealment may or may not offer you protection. It's just hiding you from being able to see you. So
sheetrock.
An example of that would be
sheetrock.
Sheetrock
will not save your life.
Or,
sheetrock,
or what's that stuff? I'm trying to think of it.
Plywood.
That you hang up in houses when you're plywood. That kind of stuff. That kind of stuff is not going to protect you. And the average door nowadays is not going to protect you, because they're not those solid wood doors that we used to have, or solid metal doors. So you can't count on that. Then you're looking for cover. So cover is something that will not only conceal you, but it will also protect you from any incoming rounds. And a wonderful example that I love to use is, do you guys have Target where you are? Do you guys have Target stores where you are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Target.
So at least,
we don't go there anymore,
yes,
though. We're
Target.
Boycotting, but, you know. But that's
okay. I
know,
right? We're boycotting them. But at least in the Targets here in Ohio, they have these massive red balls in front of the main doors. They're massive concrete balls. Those are phenomenal for cover. They are phenomenal because they're just massive concrete balls. So if you're ever caught in a situation like that, that would be a perfect cover. Now, of course, it's temporary, as pretty much any cover is. If you're in a gunfight, you don't want to stay in any one place for an extended amount of time. You get behind cover, and you're always looking for better cover while you're trying to take out that threat. Another awesome cover is your car's engine block, because a lot of people think, oh, I can just hide behind the door of my car like they see on TV.
Yeah,
no,
that was Adam 12.
That bullet's going to go straight through that.
Yeah.
And especially since they're not making cars the way they used to. Remember those steel, heavy cars that we used to drive? They don't make them like that anymore.
That old Dodge.
There you go.
That thing would save your
life. They don't make them like that anymore. And the thingies, the plastic that they have out there now, pistol rounds will penetrate those easily. So, nope, not behind a door, not something like that. You want to be behind the engine block or tucked into a wheel well. That's another good place that will protect you. So when you're out and about, it's always kind of good practice to just kind of look around, that if the unthinkable were to happen, where could I get behind? What can I hide behind? What's going to give me concealment until I can find good cover? And it's all a matter of thinking on your feet and engaging tactics.
I'm resisting the obvious humor potential of talking about Target's huge balls for cover, but I'm resisting. I won't go there.
I'm not touching it.
You started it. Don't blame me. But anyway, I know exactly what you mean. I'm trying to maintain my decorum here without cracking myself up. You have an instructor voice. I don't know if you know this, but it's really interesting. When you're into your topic, you start speaking slower, more technically. It's really interesting to listen to. So when you're animated, we're joking around, it's one thing. But you have a definite instructor voice. It's really good, actually. So I think a lot more people will listen to you because of it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank
Bianca,
you.
Did you ask
that
too?
I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I was looking.
Go ahead, Bianca.
I was looking on the internet. A girl in the gun is all over the country. Is this you on the – you, Alicia? Is that you?
I'm Candy.
Candy, okay.
I do know Alicia, though, but
– That's not a code name like Bambi, and that's your real name, right? I'm just teasing you.
That's my real name. I'm try calling someone to confirm a private lesson and having their wife answer the phone, and you're like, yeah, I'm your husband's instructor, Candy. Yeah, that goes over well. That goes over real well.
Well, you must teach a lot of men, you know, if you're teaching just in general, right?
I do. I teach. I'm actually surprised by how many men I teach, and
okay.
They love working with me.
Yeah. Is there an advantage to teaching men as a woman? Excuse me. Do you think?
Yes. Because I feel that I am able to slow things down for them if they need it, and it is not stressful to their ego. Because a lot of men come into my classes with their ego on their shoulder, and they realize with me, I don't need all that, hon. I will meet you wherever you are. And if you're honest enough to tell me you have no clue how to handle that pistol in front of you, great. Then that's where we'll start. If you tell me you used to shoot 20 years ago, you haven't shot anything since then, great. That's where we'll start. I am always willing to start exactly where you are, but you have to be honest with me because even if you're not honest with me, hon, once we hit the range,
You'll see
everything I need to see. And actually, I'll see it when we're dry practicing in the classroom. I'll see it from the second you walk up to that firearm. And people don't understand that I am not judging them, but assessing them from the moment I call them and say, Joe, can you come up here and show us how you would grip this firearm?
Right.
From the moment you get up, your response, I am assessing you. Are you reluctant? Are you guarded? Are you open? Are you passing off that energy that's telling me, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. That's why I'm here, and I want to learn. And it's really cool. It's really, really cool if you come into it with an open mind and just realize you don't know who's sitting in front of you, so you need to find out who are they, what do they need, and how can I serve them. That's what I do with everything I do. How can I serve you? How can I bless you? How can I encourage you? And then we go from there.
That's wonderful. And I never thought about it until we started talking about it. I'm thinking that men, you know, with a male instructor are going to want to show that instructor how good they are. It's kind of like a guy thing. But with you, they don't have anything to prove.
Yes.
So that's interesting. Huh. The other thing
I found, too,
go ahead.
That works well with women as well, because you will find out that women tend to be outstanding shooters, and that a lot of times that's because they don't bring anything to the table. They don't bring ego. They don't bring any of that. They will happily tell you, I have no clue what I'm doing. Teach me. And because they're so willing to learn, if you teach a woman properly, she will excel because she will do exactly what you tell her to do.
Yeah, women are more trusting. It's interesting. I used to teach flying, and I hope to again. But when I was a flight instructor in my early 30s, I had more women students than just about any other instructor because I treated all my students equally. I wasn't more demanding. I wasn't less demanding. I didn't teach more or teach less. I mean, whether they were older, you know, I had a 75-year-old student and I had high school kids. I had male students, female students. Everybody had the same standard. And because of that, you know, I think I was able to teach people pretty well. I was a tyrant with everybody. I was terrible. Benevolent dictators are probably a closer thing to the point. But here's what I found out, and I don't know if this is true with women and firearms and men. The guys wouldn't listen as well. They thought they knew it all. They were more willing to sort of try things on their own. And they thought they knew better, and they'd find, but then they make a mistake, and then they go, gee, I better listen. And then they do it. But the guys in most situations would gut it out longer. They would try harder to find a solution. Cause I put people in challenging situations, bad weather, crosswinds, things like that. And the guys would work longer before asking for help or giving up. Now the women would listen better. They trusted me more. They learned faster, but they gave up faster too. If a situation got really challenging, they were faster to say, "You take over. You get me out of this situation." Do you see that with guns
gotcha.
At all? What do you think?
Yes, actually, okay. Yes, I do. And the ladies, especially if husbands are involved at all,
mm-hmm.
the ladies who give up quicker are the ones who. Well, I don't know how to rack this. My husband always does that for me. I don't know how to load mags. My husband always does that for me. I don't know how to this. My husband always does that for me. And I will counter that with, well, gee, I hope standing right there when that potential threat jumps out from
the
around
fan.
The corner. Cause,
if
he's not, hun, you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, on that topic, guns for women, let's talk about that for a bit. In fact, I've got John Delmonico, who's the guest in the next hour. I might bring him on a couple of minutes early. And you're welcome to stick around, too, because this is fun. I'm having a good time.
I got her picture here. She's very beautiful. Her husband
is
very
go.
Lucky.
Oh, yeah. Well, good for him. Good for her. That's wonderful.
Aww,
yeah. So, see, I told you you're among friends here. So a girl and a gun, did you start that organization or you just have chapters in your
Oh my
area?
Gosh. No.
Okay. I just want to get that clear.
Brilliant. Two brilliant ladies, Juliana Crowder started it. And uh-huh. our current top dog is Robin Sandoval. And she is, oh my gosh, both of these ladies are phenomenal, but Robin's at the helm right now and she is phenomenal. I mean, I tip my hat to that lady because she is amazing. There
why don't you bring
is
her
not
on the show?
Enough time. Yeah,
bring her on the
I,
show when
you
you've got when we get your report going here. This is fun.
I would love it. Now okay. I do have to tell you, unfortunately, I have to step off because I have another meeting at 10.
Oh
but,
my! Such a busy
I
life.
I texted you. I know, right? You don't even know. So I texted you my information,
okay.
and you will have that. And it's got all the stuff that I do because I'm also a state leader for DC Project. I'm the training coordinator for Buckeye Firearms Association. I'm a board member for Faster Saves Lives here in Ohio. I'm a USCCA instructor. I'm an NRA training counselor and life member. So I got a little stuff going on.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I need like a 5-minute theme just to list your resume. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, she's got a big resume. You know, me and Greg is endowed with Write Your Laws, where citizens can write the laws that they wish to be ruled by. And I myself is a volunteer for Convention of States, which is trying to have an Article 5 Constitution of Convention to make sure that our Second Amendment rights are protected. So I may be contacting you later on, or even him too, because this is something that the members of who you work with should know about. And looking at Ohio, I think Ohio has signed on the legislature with the proposal. So we'll be in touch.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Guys, this has been amazing, and I really, really hope we get to do this again really soon. This has
been
I want
to talk to you about being a regular. I just got to find time and see how much, you know, what we want to do and how we're going to figure it out. But, yeah, you're in. Let me get my where is it here? My applause once again. There we go.
That's so awesome.
You have no idea. I've got buttons on all kinds of stuff.
You know
yeah,
what? I am a really, really really cheap date. I'm telling you that right now. It takes very little to keep me very happy. I'm a cheap date.
I love
date.
It.
So I'm
a round of applause and she's ours. Pianki, what do you think? Two rounds of applause and she's ours. She's in.
All right,
Candy.
Well, she's one of your better guests.
Oh, yeah. No, this Candy is incredible to meet you.
Guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I get lucky sometimes. You know, we just get amazing people. And I'm glad we could work this out. So, Candy, you have a wonderful weekend. Great time. We'll talk. We'll get you on next Friday. We'll figure out how we can figure this all out, and we'll just come there. Thanks, darling. Appreciate
Sounds
it.
Sounds good. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Sounds good. All right. You take care. All right, so I got a couple minutes. Let me take a quick break here, and then we'll get John DeMonico, another good person.
That's just
so
wonderful there.
This organization
is all over the country. I never knew they existed, but they all over the place.
Well, you know, I knew about DC Project because of Shirley. You know, Shirley Watchell, who was on for better part of a year. She's the Florida chair. So I don't know if Candy's the Ohio chair. Or maybe she just works with DC Project, but some of those I know. But the whole gun organizations are exploding. Women gun organizations are exploding. I don't know how many black women instructor gun organizations are exploding, but she's amazing. You know, so this has been a real pleasure. So I'm just lucky founder, do what I normally do, look around Facebook. You know, people contact me or I contact them and we just start talking. I never talked to her before. This is the first time we've actually met.
She goes against the grain. She's a gun enthusiast, strong proponent for the Second Amendment. She's black and she has 12 kids. Can you imagine going in? I got 12 kids in the atmosphere that we have today with seemingly everybody's against kids.
Well, I'm glad you're here because I had a feeling you'd want to talk to her. I just had that feeling. So I was kind of hoping you'd be on the line. If you weren't, you were certainly going to be on the line next time. So that worked out well. So, John, hang on for a minute, and I'll get right to you in just a bit. I got to play a couple things, and we'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, so now we have our second gun guest of the day, and this has been great because it just worked out this way. You know, I mean, the radio gods in the sky provide some wonderful things sometimes. So I'm going to make John DeMonico's line live, and then I'm going to tell you a story. So all of a sudden, we've got a gun group here at Action Radio, the Action Radio gun page. And I post all kinds of gun stories. We've got the governor of New Mexico there. We've got different guns. We've got, it's a fairly active page, one of our more active groups here. And this group started showing up, the Women's Firearm Academy. I thought, okay, well, this would be interesting because, you know, like I say, I like to promote women and guns. Obviously, I had Candy on. And I'm thinking, and then this person starts writing me, JD. I'm thinking, well, this must be the gun chick, you know, of Women's Firearm Academy. And so we're going back and forth. And then I finally found out his name is John DeMonico. I said, you're a dude. She says, yeah, last time I looked. So we're just kind of cracking up over that. It's been funny. So John DeMonico, welcome to Action Radio. How you doing?
Hey, hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's give him a round of applause, too. A round of applause today. So we just had Candy Petticoat on, and I never talked to her, and I've never talked to you either. So this is like two firsts. But you've got a story too, and it's completely different than Candy's. You know, I don't think you're a black woman with 12 kids living somewhere in Ohio. You're in Wyoming somewhere, right? Or Montana? It's Montana,
Montana.
Right?
Yep,
so
Montana.
Let's hear your story.
I'm still a dude.
You're still a dude. Okay, that's good. Well, if you're in Montana, you better be. I don't know. Even the women are dudes in Montana. But that's pretty country. But it's freezing cold out there. Why are you in that ridiculously cold place?
You know, it's a great place to live.
Okay. I've heard that.
It's a fantastic area. It's a great place to live. And, you know, fortunately, we're in a part of the country where we still have a fair amount of our freedoms left.
Right. Well, and now I'm wondering if it's because the fact that it's not a huge population, you don't have, you know, massive cities, you don't have, you know, liberal mayors destroying everything. You probably don't have a big Democrat. If, you know, the Democrats kind of hide in Montana, it's probably not a large amount. I'm sure even the liberal Republicans hide.
Yeah, you know, it's actually kind of the opposite, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
The rural areas are fairly conservative, but now, especially with the influx of people in the last 4 or 5 years, the cities are getting concentrated, and they're starting to concentrate on the left, unfortunately.
How many is exactly. That because of the illegal population that's coming in, or is it just liberals are moving in?
I think that just everyone's trying to flee the areas they've already destroyed, so now they're coming to our areas to try and work on that.
The leftist locusts, yeah. So yes. Ted Turner, is that where Ted Turner's ranch is in Montana?
Yeah, he's up here and a few other people, but, you know, he's trying to avoid him.
You didn't start off there. You were from California originally, right?
Yeah, so we were born and raised in Southern California, and then my wife's from Northern California originally.
But you don't have the accent. I mean, you got to, like, talk surfer, you know. Like, dude, you know, it's a surf's up, and then we're going to have pizza, and then we're going to have a great time, and it's like California. This is cool. Yeah. Anyway, I can do accents, too.
Yeah.
Tell me your story.
That's outstanding.
So, you're the redneck one from the first hour, but basically the same questions I had that I asked Candy. How did you get started? Were you always interested in guns? Do you have a law enforcement background? Did you hunt as a kid? Especially in California, which is like anti-gun, anti-freedom, anti-everything, especially Southern California. You know, you might as well be in a gulag, you know, living in Southern California as far as guns go. So tell me your story from, let's start at the beginning. When did you first get interested?
You know, I kind of fell into it when I was young. My parents put me in a explorer program with the police department when I was 13. And
really?
It just
did you ride
along? Yeah.
What did you do with the explorer program? How does that work?
Yeah. So it was kind of a form of the Boy Scouts at the time. And they put you through a small, like a mini academy. And you worked in the police department. So we went on ride-alongs, but we worked the front desk. We worked all the different divisions. We helped with reports and all kinds of stuff.
At 13?
One of those things where, 13.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy. Looking back, it's even crazier, right? But I kind of took to it. And so from that time on, I worked in law enforcement in one way or another for the last 30-plus years.
Federal, state, local, all of the above? Tell me what you can.
All
what's classified.
Local. Yeah, it was all local.
Okay. Why local?
Yeah, I never trust the feds.
Interesting.
I never went to, even back then, the feds weren't, you know, the cream of the crop, at least in that area.
How far back then are we talking about? Are we talking
about
Efren Zimbalist Jr.?
That was the
late.
It was the late 80s, early 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. So I came on, for a reference point, right as Rodney King was happening.
Oh, wow.
So in L.A. at that time.
So you were like a rookie cop, you know, when the Rodney King riots were happening?
Yep. That's when I started.
Anything you want to tell us about that particular chapter? I'm curious.
It was just a surreal time. Especially,
why?
You know, I was growing up in that area, so we never experienced like the Watts riots and things like that because I was too young.
Right.
But at that time, it was like a ghost town, and everything was on fire. And then in the pockets that were crazy, it was just mayhem. Reference point today would be like if you looked at some of the riots that happened with BLM.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, riots are riots, and, you know, and it's usually leftist causes, whether it's Antifa or BLM or any particular group that's rioting. You know, it's these are incredible. And the Watts riots I know about, but I don't think I was in the country at that point, because I was born in Canada. Then my folks moved me to Australia, and I came to the United States when I was 12 years old, and this is in 1972. So I think The Watts riots were like 68, 69. Weren't they after Martin Luther King was assassinated? If I remember,
yeah, right around that time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Pianki's on the line too. So Pianki, feel free to jump in with, especially with history, because I want to make sure we got our history correct. Okay. So the one thing I remember about the whole episode with Rodney King, besides the fact that Reginald Dent got hauled out of a truck and was beaten to death with a concrete block, or close to death, were the Koreans.
Close to death.
The Koreans,
yeah.
And their SKS and AK-47 rifles were defending Koreatown.
Right.
So you want to talk about the best use of firearms. You know, we've got rioters, we've got looters, and yet the Koreans going against California law with semi-automatic rifles. Now, were they banned at that point because of the I've forgotten who the assassin was that shot the school with an AK-47 that caused massive gun loss, you know, to try and stop criminals by taking guns from the good people. That was intentionally sarcastic. But what happened? Tell me about Koreatown. Tell me about the law enforcement response. I'm curious. I've never got a chance to ask about
this. Yes. I wasn't fully in that area, but I know that it was so lawless and it was so chaotic that the cops weren't even responding to those calls. So everybody was really left on their own to defend their stuff. And the people that did it had far less damage. You know, it's like any riot. It's an any looting situation. They're going for the easy mark.
Right.
If they meet resistance, they move on. Right.
Do you know if any... Do you know if any of the folks that were defending Koreatown had to shoot a looter? What other instance of that on the police record?
Not that I know of. I know there were shots fired. I don't know if they hit anybody.
So the reason I'm asking is because now we're talking about a defensive use of firearms, a particular firearm that is particularly disgusting to the left in a liberal Los Angeles area where folks, you know, I mean, today, I mean, Gavin Newsom would prosecute them for that, for defending themselves.
Sure. Sure. Back then, though,
yet,
it wasn't quite as bad.
Okay, interesting.
So today, yeah, they get prosecuted hands down. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Back
even,
then,
even
though
they didn't shoot anybody or had to, but there was that deterrent effect. And what this goes to is that when everything falls apart, when you have complete anarchy, firearms can, you know, save your family and your property. And there's nothing wrong with saving property. People think, well, it's only property. It doesn't count. Yes, it does. Your life's invested. Your business is invested. You know, you can't get back the labor that it took to build that business if someone steals it or destroys your business. So property counts, folks. I'm very, you know, people tend to forget that. But do you know any other instances? The Koreans seem the best. Koreatown seems like the best example of a place that was left alone because they all get together and said, yep, not in our backyard.
Well, so,
yes, that's probably the best example. You know,
I
think
let's get John.
Forget
now.
Though.
Hold on, let's get John to finish first, then I'll get to Pianki. John, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I think most people forget though is this: the Rodney King incident really started the whole cottage industry of doing the police, having the riots, and getting a payout.
Oh, what was the Pianki? Hold on a second. I got to ask about this. What was the payout? Because now I just heard some of the BLM folks in New York got paid millions of dollars.
Sure, and that's where this all started. So Rodney King got a settlement from the city. The cops beat the initial case at the state level, rightfully so, but then the Fed stepped in and prosecuted them on a civil rights violation, and there's no chance of those guys not getting convicted at that point.
Right, which is double
jeopardy.
So
they understood.
But,
yeah, that's a whole separate issue, but I think everyone started to understand, look, if we do these things, we can force a settlement. Right. We can sue the cops. Oh, absolutely. 100%. And it's unfortunate because everyone bought into it. And that was basically the match that lit the fire in this whole industry.
I had no idea. That's a really interesting revelation. So that's a good insight. So thank you. Pianki, you got a question for John or a comment?
Well, see, here's the thing that happened. Koreans should file for reparations for what blacks did burning their businesses down. That's what should be happening, because that's just what they did. Those were black looters, black rioters that came in and burned those Koreans' businesses down. Mm-hmm. The way blacks are trying to sue whites for slavery, some that didn't have anything to do with it, What in Koreans need to be filing a lawsuit to make blacks pay reparations to them for their losses. They do have standing.
That would be an interesting case. Yeah, as John's finding out, we're pretty open here about what we discuss. And so this is a very interesting idea. Well, nobody has any impact from slavery. I mean, nobody today has slaves in the United States. You know, nobody today is a victim of slavery in the United States. It's not happening. And yet these myths persist. John, just, you know, from your own experience in law enforcement, did anybody ever come forward and actually make that proposal that, you know, that black riders pay reparations to Koreans and others who had their stories destroyed?
No, it's a great idea. Yeah. No, it's a great idea.
Well, it's not reparations. It's actually restitution, you know, and that's a very common thing. In go ahead. Tell me, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think restitution is probably a better word for it. If you use that system against them, but I don't think it'll ever happen. You're not going to get a jury in California to agree to it.
Well, just because they left the United States a while back.
You may not get a jury to agree with it, but then, too, you got to ask when they come to you or when they pop up wanting to seek reparations or restitution from whites, then now you got a stalemate there. We didn't get it from you for what you've done to the Koreans and probably others. Now you're asking for us to give it to you for something we didn't even have anything to do. Those riots was more recent than 1700 and 1800 events.
Yeah, I agree. I think the problem is the system's reached against you, especially if you look at the fee system. So if I sue you and I lose, then I could be culpable or responsible for your fees.
Yeah, that's a problem, too. You should be able to bring a court case, even if you lose, or especially if you lose, you know, it still is recorded as a court case, the fact that that challenge was made. And a lot of times, you know, when the Supreme Court does really horrible, bogus things, which they tend to do a lot, then people go later and go, "They see that case there? That was decided wrong. We're going to now move it this way." Roe v. Wade would be the typical, would be the perfect example. They totally screwed up that decision. That was an illegal decision, and it took 50 years for the court to fix it when the states could have fixed it a lot sooner if they had the gumption to actually do that. I want to get on to more your specialty here, the Women's Firearm Academy, and going from Southern California to Montana. So what was your experience in law enforcement in Southern California? Is that what caused you to move?
No, actually, we had kids. And California is not a place to raise kids.
Okay. Some parts of California are. Redding up north is very conservative. It's a nice area. I know it fairly well. The foothills, great place. There's a lot of conservative areas of California. Their small towns are pretty decent, but the whole, you didn't like anything about the state of California.
Yeah, no, we knew the direction was turning.
Okay.
And we can see it now. I mean, you already had high taxes. You already had restrictive laws and overreaching government, and it just continued to get worse. And as soon as we had kids, it was just, we knew for sure we needed to get out, and that was the best decision for our family.
Yeah, so we're talking 80s, 90s, that kind of time, late 80s, early 90s?
Early 2000s.
Okay, so that makes a difference. So I remember, I got to California in 1984, interesting year. And I remember, exactly, it's an easy way to remember it, right? But what I remember, when I got to San Francisco, I mean, my first weekend, I'm in Golden Gate Park, and I stumbled on Jerry Garcia's band, you know, Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. Big crowd of people, cloud of marijuana smoke, everybody having a good time. It was San Francisco. And then, you know, California, San Francisco became stratified. You had the really rich high-tech people, and you had the really poor homeless, and there was nobody in the middle. And California totally changed. But it started off, you know, when I was there, it wasn't that crowded. It had half the population. Population doubled in the time I was there. But they didn't improve the infrastructure. You still had the same amount of reservoirs and power plants and highways and things like that. So it was totally inadequate to support the population. And we used to have these really good Republican administrative boring governors. George Duke Majian. Nobody knows who he is, right? Probably one of the best governors we ever had. He was administrator. He kept the freeways open and, you know, kept things going and, you know, built reservoirs and did good things. And after him was Pete Wilson, was the police commissioner of Los Angeles. Not as good, but still a good governor. And then when Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm the governor of California now, you know, just totally went, you know, flushed down the toilet. I mean, you know, he wasn't a Republican, first of all. But there was such a change in California that, you know, the golden goose, you know, that laid the golden egg and created California. It was an incredible place to be when I was there in the 80s. But by the 90s, I could see it was already on its way down. So you probably noticed that too. Tell me in terms of law enforcement. So when did you start in law enforcement? And how were you LAPD or which department?
No, sorry, I worked for some small agencies right outside of LA, right outside of Los Angeles. One was Hawthorne and one was Torrance.
Okay.
So,
you're still greater, you're like LA, just a little bit removed from LA, but not enough. You're still close enough, right?
Yeah. So we bordered parts of Los Angeles, as well as, Inglewood, you know where the Forum is.
Mm-hmm.
So that area.
Okay. How close were you to Disney World or Disneyland? It was in Anaheim.
So that was in Anaheim, so probably an hour out.
Okay, all right. So for folks that don't know, L.A. is huge, as we know. It's in a bowl. So all the pollution gets trapped in this bowl. Were you in the pollution, area too?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So how was law enforcement in L.A. when you were there? Or that area? We'll get to Montana in just a little bit. But how was working law enforcement in the greater L.A. area?
At the time I came on, it was probably the tail end of the last generation of real cops. So, the places that I worked were pretty violent. Mm-hmm. For instance, the one city was probably about 7 square miles and it had the most crime across the board, petty crime all the way through violent crime and homicides for the surrounding 10 or 12 agencies. So we would run, a graveyard, you could run 30, 40 calls a night, most of them all felonies, But for me, it was great. I happen to be good at the job. One of those things happened to be a talent of mine. So it wasn't horrific, but we were involved in a lot of bad stuff and a lot of violent crime. The places I worked were primarily, parolees, gangs, projects, things like that.
So you saw the worst of the worst. I mean, you had some bad stuff going on there.
It was a busy city, but like I said, for us, it was great. It was a great learning experience, and I was really blessed to have a bunch of old school cops teach me how to be a cop, to be safe, how to talk to people, how to avoid those fights, how to talk them down, and if we had to fight, we knew how to fight.
So what was different about them, and when did it change, and how did it change, and how did the cops change? So describe an old school cop.
There were guys that just knew the street. They could recognize people. They recognized behaviors. You could look at someone and tell me, hey, look, what do you think this guy's doing? What do you think he's doing right now? And they could explain, okay, this is why he's a bad guy, right? Look at this movement. Look at this action. Very aware. They taught me a ton. We talk about this in classes, awareness. To learn behavior, it's like learning how to drive a car. Mm-hmm. So one of the stories I use in class is I'm driving down the street as a new cop, and my training officer would say, hey, who was in that store? And I'm like, I didn't look, so I had to turn around and look in the store. So I got pretty decent at it. But we'd drive down the street, and he'd watch me. So if I looked at the store on the right, he asked me about the store on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it made me faster. It made me better.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They taught us about how to talk to people, right? How to understand what they're saying and how to get our point across so they understand what we're saying. Communication is a two-way street, right? They've got to understand the message in order to receive it. So it's things like that. They taught us about violence, what they're capable of, how it looks, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things that kind of went into it. When it changed is probably the generation or two after mine. Back then it was a profession. It wasn't just a job. Right. And I think that's kind of what changed things.
But the people that went into it, they didn't have, masters in criminology or psychology degrees. These were high school graduates generally, right? But it was still a profession. Or am I wrong about that?
Sure. Prior to my generation or after, you mean?
Well, both. So the old school cops it was their life, but so they kind of created a profession. It's not an academic thing that they went to. They learned from the cops that they're senior cops. So it was
absolutely
okay. All right.
Yeah, but the generation after ours, that's when they started requiring college degrees. That's when they started requiring affirmative action. that's when they started lowering standards.
Okay, let's take all those three separately. This is interesting. So college, this is fascinating. So college degrees, how did that affect the police?
Well, it affected people because they weren't street smart. They didn't have this much common sense, if you want to put it that way. Right?
No, put it any way you want. I don't care. I'm asking the questions. That's where I'm curious. Yeah. Yeah.
No, you could learn things from a book, right? But if you don't have someone show them to you or teach them to you, it's not real world experience. So a good example would be like your flight book, right? People mm-hmm. could read your book, but when they get in an airplane, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah, that's why you have to do them together. You read a chapter, you go fly, you go back and read the chapter. I mean, they're meant to be, that book was written at the level, you know, the private pilot is written for the private pilots, the student pilot is written for the students, the commercial and the ATP is written for a commercial and ATP. And I use language that's specifically geared for each level. And so the more you read it, you know, the beginning stuff is real simple. I don't use no aeronautical terms at all. And then I sort of advance it as I go through. So do you, of course, now I have to ask, do you fly or have wanted to learn to fly? Because a lot of cops fly. It's very interesting. Have you wanted to learn?
I knew you. At one point I did. I haven't since then.
All right. I taught a lot of cops how to fly. You know, this is something I found fascinating. And it's interesting that flying is still mostly guys. And it's guys that are mechanics, plumbers, contractors, electricians, cops, you know, real basic, you know, nuts and bolts, a lot of blue collar stuff. Because, and I've taught doctors and lawyers too, and they were hopeless. Oh my God, they were terrible pilots. Because they're arrogant and they thought they knew everything. And I imagine the college degree cops are probably that same way. I went to college. I have a degree from, you know, UCLA in criminal psychology. I know more than you. Oh yeah, really? Let's go on the street and find out. How am I doing?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's pretty close. Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. The people that you taught to fly in those industries, do you think it's because they were more independent and they could think on their feet and solve those problems?
Yeah, I think it's because they were generalists is the usual thing that mechanics and other folks, they have to make decisions. They have to think of a bunch of different factors. When you fly an airplane, there's a lot of things going on. When you're a cop, like I say, you got to watch the store on the left, the store on the right. There's a lot of things going on. And people that focus so much, like if you're doing an academic degree, you're laser focused on your degree and the specific courses, you know, and the further up you get, if you get a master's or you get a PhD, you focus even more. It makes you less of a generalist and actually a worse pilot. You know, that's why the Supreme Court judges are the worst in the judiciary, because they're the most focused, the most narrow-minded, and they've lost the touch with everything else. It's really kind of interesting.
Sure.
But cops make really good pilots because you're used to making decisions. You're responsible. You've handled emergencies. You know, there's a lot of things that are very similar. And the reason I'm saying this is because Bianchi is also a pilot. The rules are changing, especially in Montana. You might have a blast doing this, that the light sport aircraft category is increasing. The speed's increasing. You know, instead of the 100-knot limitation, it's going to be like 200, you know, plus. We've got these carbon fiber airplanes, 160-horsepower Rotax engines that are, you know, powered by auto gasoline. You know, so the aviation world's about to explode. So I'm just dropping a hint right now. You might want to take a look at it as things are changing. All right. So let's go. Bianchi, do you have a question before I totally change subjects? And I'm having way too much fun here again. We have two fabulous guests this show today.
What
I'm really
know,
amazed. Go ahead.
Did he get involved in all these car chases that we see on YouTube? Helicopters involved?
Yeah, OJ. Were you in OJ? Come on, let me know. We got to know.
Okay, so I got a funny story about OJ. I actually watched him drive by on the freeway.
Oh, my God. OJ did the drive-by for you? That's wild.
And
go,
my partner and I had a conversation about actually ramming him.
Really? Why didn't you?
Yeah. Because we thought we'd get fired. And
so wait
back,
a minute. So
anyway.
We've got an alleged murderer, you know, racing down the street in a white Bronco. Everybody sees him. And you don't want to stop a criminal because you might get fired for it? You have to explain that.
Well, so here's the deal. When pursuits happen, they're jurisdictional, right? And that was LAPD's pursuit. And they already had, you know, 12 cars following the guy.
So helicopters, news.
Yeah,
the whole
everybody
world
was
following
there.
That guy. Yeah,
right,
okay.
Everybody was watching it. So, you know, as an agency, our rule was just to block the entrance of the freeway so traffic didn't get in the way and didn't get hurt.
Okay.
Right. So we all have a role, basically. So, yeah, I mean, hindsight, I mean, know what I know now? Yeah, we should have just done it. You know, one thing
would have
been
got fired. Yeah.
And we'd,
you'd be on the talk show circuit. You'd write a book. You'd
We'd all live in infamy. Yeah. But, you know, back then nobody knew that. We watched him drive by, which was kind of crazy.
That is crazy. That's a great story. I mean, the people I get on my show telling me these amazing stories, it's like, it reminds me when I had the two guys on back at WBY when I was had a radio show at a regular station. And I was asked about stand down orders in Benghazi, and these two guys in the military called in and said, yep, totally different theaters. You know, one was in Italy and the other one was in the Mediterranean on a ship somewhere. And they both called in and said, yep, we got stand down orders. I can confirm it. I'm like, okay, now I'm good. So what is it about local law enforcement that you liked as compared to even county sheriffs or state police, you know, the highway patrol, the CHIPS, or even the feds, the FBI? Let's kind of work through the different levels and tell me what's different about them.
So local is usually just at one city.
Okay.
So you live in, you know, whatever city is not Los Angeles so much because they're broken up, but let's say it's Torrance. They have a local police department. That's Torrance. Mm-hmm. They patrol that area. Now they have police power statewide. But they don't now, you know, generally speaking, they don't go out in the state and enforce other laws.
Unless OJ is driving by.
Sheriff's Department.
In which case.
Yeah, exactly, right?
All right,
I'm still going to reserve that forever.
I'm going to bring it back at many opportunities. This is fun. Yeah, anyway. But,
I could do so.
Well, back to our analysis, yeah.
County patrols the whole county. You know, so Los Angeles counties, they'll patrol the county, but they also contract the cities, too. So let's say Compton can't afford their police department anymore. They'll hire the sheriff's department to come in under contract to patrol.
Oh, interesting. And like unincorporated areas too. They use county sheriffs as well, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, so unincorporated areas and plus some of the cities do it as well. Then you've got, you know, the state police, which are statewide. Then the CHP, which handles all the roads, basically the freeways, things like that.
Right.
And they're statewide as well. And then you can go to the federal level with the, you know.
So I'm more curious why you picked local and why you stayed local as opposed to moving up to California Highway Patrol or the federal, different like DEA, FBI, things like that. So let's go county sheriff. Because the county sheriff to me is a great place to be because the sheriffs are constitutional. They're elected. They can do things that a lot of law enforcement, like police chiefs, can't do without getting fired. So
sure. At the time, though, and even now, so the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, you had to spend a minimum of 2 to 3 years in working in their custody in jail before you can get on the streets.
Oh,
and that didn't
appeal. How exciting! Me. Yeah, no kidding. Okay.
So I didn't want to have to sit and work in a jail setting for 2 or 3 years before I could actually get on the street.
Okay.
And that was just me. That there's some value in that. Don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, but you're going to get jaded. So you're going to deal with criminals, and then you're going to go out, you know, and talk to normal people again. It's, I don't know. I would think that would slant your view of life a little bit.
Yeah, I can.
Well,
but if you use it as a learning opportunity, it works as well, because then you get to see the criminals. You get to see how they interact. You can learn from it as well. So there is some benefit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure as well. Okay, Pianchi, you had a question?
Well, my question is this. Now, when you got these federal officials, FBI or don't they have to check in with the sheriff before they go knocking on doors in your territory?
They're supposed to check in. It's one of those, it's not necessarily a hard and fast rule. And half the time they do, half the time they don't.
See, yeah, they should check in.
I would arrest them for that. Yeah, we, John, just to let you know, we're very big on state powers and local powers as opposed to the federal powers. I actually have a bill to disarm the entire federal bureaucracy, all 287,000 agents, because the Constitution only has three crimes, treason, bribery, counterfeiting, and piracy. Those are the only crimes mentioned in the Constitution. Treason is defined by Congress in times of war, and the U.S. Marshals can handle the traitors. Counterfeiting, that's the Secret Service, and they should go back to Treasury and handle that. And piracy, you know, if you're on the high seas, that'd be the Navy, you know, the Coast Guard. You know, if you're in the air, that'd be the Air Force or the State National Guard. If you're on land, state police. So there's nobody that really should be armed in the federal government except maybe the U.S. Marshals and the Secret Service. That's it. So there's really nothing they should be handling. There should not be an FBI in your state doing things, you know, that you don't know about as a local law enforcement officer. To me, I wouldn't even, if they want to come in, be investigators, sure. But all the guns should be carried by the local police because you know the people. So just to sort of expand on what Pianchi was saying, do you have any interactions with the FBI folks that you'd like to share at this time? I'd be curious.
You cut out a little bit, I'm sorry.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, I just missed the question.
Oh, okay.
It might have been my end, so it's hard.
No, okay. Did you have any interactions with the FBI that might cause you a little grief? You know, how were they? How did they treat you as the local law enforcement and the people with jurisdiction in that local area?
Locally, my interaction was never really got along. That's that college degree problem, right? If you come in thinking you're superior, you come in thinking you know better, you come in thinking you're going to take everything over, it doesn't sit well with people like us, especially A-type personalities who work in the street. And that's always been the tension between them. And generally speaking, we're on different wavelengths. Like you said, if we know the street, we understand how to operate in the street. Mm-hmm. You come in and with some half-assed plan or no plan at all, or change the protocols because it wanted to suit you, that's not going to work for us. It's just not safe in a lot of environments. Right. So, you know, that's the kind of interaction we always had with them. And they always had that kind of superior mindset. You know, we're the feds, we're the FBI, we'll take it from here type of thing. It's almost like the classic movie scene.
Right. Yeah, no, I think there's several like Bruce Willis movies come to mind. He's like, when we commandeer your men, we'll let you know. It's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
They don't even have that jurisdiction. And this is something fascinating to me. The FBI has no jurisdiction. There's nothing in the Constitution that calls for a national police force. They can't even be armed. And yet they're roaming around the country telling local and state law enforcement what to do. It's the states that have the law enforcement power, from the state police to the county sheriffs to the local law enforcement. These people have no jurisdiction constitutionally, and yet with their superior attitudes and their masters in criminal, you know, psychology and whatever else they've got, you know, walk in and tell you what to do with people that you know, because you know, if you live in that area, you know all the criminals because you've watched them grow up. You know who they are.
Just like the FBI killed this man that had all the guns. It was supposed to have been threatening Joe Biden. They should have checked in with the sheriff. The sheriff probably knew that man.
That's
and
a great point.
I think he was in a wheelchair, but I'm not sure. But think about
John, do you know that one?
Talk about it.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Tell me about that.
That whole thing is scandalous, and those guys, something's not right there. 100%.
Well, tell me more. What do you think? Why would they? Is this like? I mean, the worst case scenario is Waco. The FBI, ATF go in and kill a whole community. Regardless of what you think of that community, you know, they walked in, killed them, burned them, and they ended up buried in the ground. You know, and so talk about not due process. You know, and if the local law enforcement, the sheriffs would have handled it, they would just say, "Hey, David, come on in. We got to talk." Oh, okay, fine. You know, he used to talk to the sheriff all the time. So a totally outrageous situation. But let's talk about this one here. So we've got a guy who was, wheelchair bound or crippled. You know, made some really stupid posts on Facebook. I mean, but that doesn't. You shouldn't be assassinated for that. So what's going on? Who are these people that run our federal law enforcement now? How can they do something like this?
That's a great question. I think they should be disbanded, frankly. So I think what they did there is probably, if not minimum immoral and unethical, probably criminal.
So is there any crime that or any situation that the FBI thinks they can handle that couldn't be handled either as well or better simply by state police and local police because you guys all know each other? Is there any need for an FBI at all?
No.
Okay.
Let's get short answer. No.
No, I mean maybe their fingerprint bank or their DNA sample bank, but as far as actual enforcement,
even that's a mess. That's a mess.
Really?
If you look at their DNA samples, they're backlogged years.
Oh, I didn't know.
So
that.
You know. Oh, absolutely. So even
you should tell Congress. Yeah, I need to get to my congressman. Yeah. My congressman's Matt Gaetz,
stuff's backlogged forever.
Interesting.
They're beyond repair at this point. They need to scrap it.
I need to send the show to Matt Gaetz. He needs to get rid of the FBI. That'd be a good thing. We've talked about that for years anyway. Okay,
can we talk about...
Go ahead.
I just want, because you asked about that incident where the guy got shot at the wheelchair,
right?
Who was threatening the Biden. That never should have happened. There was a 100% better way that should have been handled, where no bloodshed would have happened at all.
How?
But they chose to take a position and a stance and a tactic that almost forced that issue to occur. Right.
How would you have handled
it? You've got a guy that's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Who physically can't even carry out the threat. But let's assume that you think that he might be able. He belongs to a local church.
Mm-hmm.
Right. apparently he's active in that church. Mm-hmm. So instead of either going to that pastor and saying, hey, look, we've got to talk to this guy. He's having some issues. We want to make sure everything's okay. Can you call him and have him come in? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when he gets in his car, make a traffic stop and contact him and then take him into custody. Or better yet, just wait. He goes to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
You wait till he gets in his car. He drives to the church. You, again, make a traffic stop, contact him, take him out of the car, and take him into custody. Problem solved. But what do they do?
That's brilliant.
They do a pre-dawn raid with flashbangs and force the issue. And then, conveniently, they won't either release the body cam information or they don't have it.
Yeah, this is a problem I have, you know, as a person that is rather controversial. You know, we have our legislative arm of here at writeyourlaws.com. We're writing all kinds of bills, one of which is to disarm the feds. You know, what if they decide, you know, to raid my place and it's the middle of the night? How am I going to know, you know, in my sleeping stupor, how am I going to know if it's a home invasion by a criminal or whether who's saying they're FBI or whether it's real FBI? You know, it's one of those split-second decisions, and if I'm wrong, you know, I could get killed by the home invader. And if I'm wrong again, you know, I could get killed by the FBI simply for trying to defend myself. And I think a lot of us activists think about that. So what are we supposed to do? How do we make that decision split-second? And we wouldn't have to make that decision if the FBI wants to talk to me, they can call. They can call the show. Hear that, FBI, KGB? I know you're out there listening. You know, I mean, or just talk to me. I you know, I would invite him into my place, but I could go meet with a lawyer. Sure, you want to talk to me? I'll talk.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What's your problem?
Yeah,
I'm not going to give him my rights. I'm not going to, right. You know. And so this is a dilemma for activists now because of, you know, if you can get a pre-dawn raid and get killed simply for making some really stupid posts on Facebook, and they were really stupid posts.
Sure.
But you don't get your shit.
No, here's another thing.
Okay, and then I want to get to his academy. All right.
Whites are treated different. Whites are abused more so than blacks. And where's the news media? Where's the press conference? If that was a black person, it would be all over the news. But this is a white person whose civil rights was violated. He was murdered, gunned down, slaughtered by the FBI, then you don't hear no marching, no tearing up buildings, no rioting, no looting.
That's a good point.
Yeah, no, I agree. So the last point on this would be the easiest and best topic, even for SWAT teams now, is what's called a surround and call out. You surround the business, you surround the building, you surround the house, and you call inside there and you call them out of the house. If they refuse to come out, then you got to change your tactics a little bit. But there's nothing wrong with waiting. There's nothing wrong
with
waiting.
Yeah, what's the rush?
So we'll use you as an example. The FBI is going to come and raid you. Mm-hmm. So they surround your house. They make a phone call and they say, hey, look, we're outside. We've got a warrant. You need to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You, being a normal person, say, okay, I'm going to come out. I don't want to, but I'm going to come out with my hands up. But I don't get killed.
Yeah, let me put my shoes on first. Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Instead of kicking in your door, throwing tear gas in, throwing a flashbang in, and having five guys yell and scream at you, right? With guns.
You see, that makes much more sense. That's infinitely, you know. And if they have a problem, then that makes so much more sense. The whole idea is why would they go for the most extreme, most violent, unless they enjoy it? I think they enjoy it.
That or they're proving a political point.
Well, that too. We're gonna. I need you. Yeah, I need you as a regular guest also. What I'm thinking of is having you and Candace, you know, split an hour. Like, she'll take the first half hour, you take the second half hour, if we can do that. We'll just, like, focus on one thing. If you're interested, let me know. Think about it. No rush. But I think you two would be dynamite to have on it as regular reporters, because we have so much that we need to talk about, especially in terms of law enforcement. All right. If you want to do it, you can tell me now if you're interested. But I certainly want you to think about it.
I actually caught the last, like, 10 minutes of her interview. She sounded fantastic.
Isn't she great?
So it was great to listen to. Definitely interested. So, yeah, let me know.
So what I'll probably do is have you guys overlap a little bit, you know, get her to stay an extra 5 minutes and you about 5 minutes early, give you, like, a 10-minute overlap. This is – Pianki, isn't this similar to what we had before? We had Jim Dykes of Florida Carry, and we had Shirley Watchell of DC Projects. And so it's almost like history's repeating itself here.
Lady, the last lady go against everything that the left talks. She, one thing, she got 12 kids.
Yeah, well, look at John. I mean, John. Well, we haven't even gotten to the Women's Firearm Academy. We got to tell that story. But here we've got a guy that has no respect for the FBI, thinks they're a bunch of thugs, and has much better ways to handle things. And they just don't. Excuse me. And they just don't do it. All right. Let's, before we run out of hour. Well, we can't go. Back time, but before we let's get to how you went from a Torrance cop to running a woman's firearms academy. I still find this amusing, right? Up in Montana. So tell that story.
Yeah, so when we moved up here, I had always been doing some form of training, either, you know, instruction or teaching, whatever it happened to be. So I brought that up here and was doing it on the side. And happened to hook up with the original founder of the Women's Firearm Academy probably 5-6 years ago now. And she was primarily focused on firearms.
Oh, was she a dude too?
She was a woman.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she was a woman for sure. Yeah, it's a good question. You know, you got it. But, you know, her primary focus was firearms, hence the name. So when we kind of got together, we started incorporating a lot of our stuff, which was more of the awareness, hands-on, self-defense, and then the mindset and the legal training as well. Like you mentioned, it's cold up here. So she got tired of the cold, decided she wanted to kind of go someplace warm, which was good for her. Asked if we wanted to take it over 3-4 years ago now. And we did. And so we've been running it ever since.
But she got a pretty strong, you know, conservative self-defense culture there in Montana anyway. So what do folks need to learn that they're not getting, you know, just growing up, as opposed to like an LA liberal family who'd never heard of a gun? Wouldn't recognize, you know, which end to look at, you know.
Right. Part of it's some formal training, right?
Okay.
A lot of that. Usually it's, we get a ton of women that, you know, either had a bad experience with a gun, which is, you know, Uncle Buck took them out and gave them a 12-gauge when they were 10 and knocked them on their butt and everybody thought it was
no fun. Hearing protection, you know, all kinds of stuff. Right. Yeah.
Sure. Or, you know, husband, boyfriend, whoever, friend of the family, you know, put some hand cannon in their hand and did the same thing.
Because they thought it'd be funny. Do you find that a lot? I mean, are guys that stupid that they're going to give like a 44 Magnum to, you know, an 18-year-old teenager, you know, just to show how tough they are, you know, and make her look silly? I mean, is that kind of crap still going on? I guess it does.
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, we're guys, we're retarded. We definitely have our issues. Well,
yeah,
I agree. But, you know, we do have our issues, and our sense of humor are different, probably a little bit. But there's also the flip side to that too. There's a lot of guys that are well-meaning and well-intentioned, but they just don't understand how women work and how their bodies work and how they're different. So, you know, the classic girl gun is a revolver, right?
Right.
So they'll go to the store and they'll say, okay, look, woman's looking for a gun. Guy will hand her a 5-shot Smith & Wesson, you know, probably an air weight, and say, how's it feel in your hand? Perfect. Take it home, it's your gun, right? What they don't account for is they don't account for the recoil.
Yeah.
They don't account for the way it works. They also don't account really for the trigger press. You've got women that don't have the hand strength due to injuries or due to arthritis or because they're getting up there in age who can't physically pull that trigger 5 times.
That's interesting. I never thought of that. And you don't have time necessarily to cock the hammer. That's a whole other operation.
Sure. If it's hammerless, you're only the option.
Right. That's even worse. Yeah. Light revolvers. Right. I owned one briefly. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'1", right? You know, and I wouldn't shoot. I even owned a Walther PPK because I wanted to be James Bond. Those things suck to shoot.
Right.
The caliber is too small.
Sure.
But they hurt. I got a little hand bite from that slide coming back, you know, and... little guns suck. Yeah. Give me a big gun. I mean, big guns are much easier. And that, I mean, I've taught a few women to shoot, and that's one thing I tell them. I said, you know, I'll take my 6-inch, you know, 357 Ruger GP100. Oh, it's a big gun. I said, but yeah, 38 Specials, look, this is going to be easy. Trust me. And they can shoot it. And they're, you know, after a few rounds, like, wow, this is kind of cool. Because it's a large gun. It's got the weight. So the recoil is minimal, especially with 38 Specials in it. And they really enjoy it. And then we're talking about women that aren't, you know, huge, strong brutes, maybe like Candy, you know, but she's a trip. I really enjoy talking to her.
Sure.
But, yeah.
So we've got a class of basically how to choose a gun, right? And we shoot, I think we're 13, 14 different guns in that class all ranges, 22 all the way through the 45, at least two of each caliber, plus a revolver. So we throw a lot of different options at them.
Okay.
But the Walther is a good example, that little James Bond gun. It feels great in your hand. Right. But it sucks to shoot.
It really does.
Right? But that's the common problem, especially for women and guns.
Right.
So a guy will buy a woman a gun, and they'll hate it because it doesn't fit their hand properly. It has too much recoil. It's just not the right gun for them. Right. Probably
you can't buy a gun for somebody else. And this goes men to men too. You cannot buy a gun for somebody else. You can't do it. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Right. But you've got to have that experience.
All right. Wait. Let's go Bianchi first. Then we'll get back to John. Bianchi, what's your James Bond experience?
Yeah, I bought my daughter a Walther. Yeah,
does she like it? Does she like it?
I'm not having no complaints so far. She got 201. She got that, and she got a 9.
Yeah, see, I think a 9mm is a better caliber anyway. And you can get a Glock that is easier to shoot, only a little bit bigger than a Walther. 380 Walthers. Oh, God. Awful guns. Mm-hmm. But they look really cool. Yeah. And they do feel good in your hand. You know, 6 hours,
right.
Same thing.
Exactly.
I had a P220 with the single stack P220. It was a great gun. I couldn't shoot it. It was too small. The grip was too small. I got these lumberjack hands. So, you know, I need the larger guns. I need double stacks. All right. So, Pianca, did you have another point? I didn't mean to... Do we finish that with the Walther?
Do you have an organization? Are you head of any group? You know, Greg is head of Write Your Own Laws, where people are taught how to write the laws which they wish to be governed by. And I'm with Convention of State, who's working to do an Article 5 Constitutional Convention. And Montana, I don't think, is on the list yet. So, you know, there's a lot to be gained from all parties.
Well, I think
yeah,
you
no,
mentioned
for
before,
sure.
But
I mean,
just to be clear, let's talk about your organization and or company and contact information, all that good stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just a normal, basically a business right now. We do some volunteer stuff as well as local organizations. We run a with Babes and Bullets chapter, which is basically a free monthly meeting.
What's it called? Slowly?
Babes and Bullets.
Babes and Bullets. Okay, I love it.
Yep.
Yeah, John runs the Women's Firearms Gap. I mean, you know, we should get back to how that started. Well, we know you took over from the previous owner, but how does that go over? You know, a dude running the Women's Firearm Academy. Do you have women expecting a woman to run it, and do you teach as well? Do you have women instructors? How is the organization structured?
So generally, I do most of the training. We do have some women come in from time to time.
Okay.
We've been really fortunate in the sense that we kind of had a base from the previous owner, and a lot of those people carried over to us, which was fantastic.
Good.
They bought into us as an organization personally as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're just fortunate in that sense. We're kind of an anomaly in the industry, especially around here, is that, you know, any kind of training industry, especially firearms, they're usually one-offs, right? You'll see the person one time, you'll never see them again.
Oh.
And our return rate has got to be
close
to the 85-90% rate, where people will come back for more classes and different things, especially our mindset stuff, especially our legal stuff. So we cover lots of self-defense. We cover what your mind and body are going to do under stress. We talk about a ton of self-defense options, both hands-on and both the mental aspects, as well as the awareness stuff. Blessed in the sense that, you know, we've got a larger course offering. We've got people to continue to keep coming back time and time again to keep learning.
Do they travel to your school at all? Because were you Whitefish or something like that?
Yeah, so we're from Whitefish, Montana, kind of Flathead Valley, like northwestern Montana. But, yeah, we've been really, crazily enough, fortunate for people to come across the state and from other states and Canada.
Really?
And, a couple from overseas as well.
Got a little airfield by the
school?
Have heard
about us or had some friends. And
you should have fly-ins. You know, do you have an airfield nearby?
We're actually, yes, we've got a smaller Whitefish. We're 10 minutes from Glacier International Airport.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're real close to Glacier National Park, probably 35 minutes away.
Ooh, beautiful country, except in the wintertime.
Yeah.
I'll come
Can't
visit
complain.
In spring or fall. That's about it. Summer's too hot,
right.
And winter's too cold. Yeah. You get four seasons, but you get the extreme four seasons. You get, you know, really pretty outrageous there. So Do you have competitions? Do you have a shooting league? Do you have your own range? Do you go to a different range? How does it all work?
So we're fortunate we get to shoot on our property most of the time. And then in the wintertime and other times, we have a range that we belong to. It's a local range. It's actually underground, which is kind of a trip. So everything's underground.
Oh, the bunker.
So, yeah, it's a five.
Called the bunker?
Yeah, kind of. It's a five pistol lanes and three rifle lanes. So the rifle lanes are 100 yards out, and they're in a sonotube, like one of those 8-foot sonotubes. And that runs all the way out so people can sight their rifles and do all that kind of stuff. And you know, so we've always got places.
What's a sonotube?
You know those big, like, corrugated metal tubes?
Oh.
So think of it in terms of like an 8-foot big underground sewage pipe.
Yeah, I am. It's kind of I'm trying to think, shooting. It must be loud. I'm trying to think shooting through that sounds very loud.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, we're hearing protection, but it's actually not as loud as you think.
Huh.
Yeah.
I got Marco in the Netherlands who listens to us, and he types in. So he says, I can't have a gun, not allowed. But he can buy something, and there's airsoft guns. So, you know, it'd be really interesting to do, because we do have a lot of European listeners. We need to get the rest of the world to be able to have Second Amendment rights. I'm not sure how to do that. I'd like to sort of get some of our gun organizations together. But what do you say, you know, what about these countries? You know, do you get folks from European countries or from Asian countries that just have never shot a gun and they can't own one in their own country? It's so different.
For sure.
Or Canadians, because Canadians are right across the border.
Yep.
They can't own handguns anymore. So do you have international folks coming in?
It's a trip. It's just a totally different thing, right? Most of those people are terrified of them because they never even handled one. They see them on TV. And that's their reference point. It's either, you know, they're a victim of a crime, or their reference point is, you know, John Wick.
Yeah.
So
a little different
real
life
idea.
Right.
A
little louder. You have to reload them.
Exactly.
You know.
But, you know, truthfully.
Yeah.
For those people, you know, a gun is a great equalizer. Don't get me wrong. But it's a tool for a really small subset of problems. You're five times more likely to be involved in something where a gun's not moral, ethical, or even legal to use.
Right.
So you need to have some awareness skills. You need to have some hands-on skills. You know, that's
hands-on as in physical, like martial arts or self-defense or basic techniques or what? What do you think?
Self-defense.
Teach?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We do general self-defense. It's not martial arts or sports related.
Right.
And it's based on your body mechanics. So women are far more stronger or far stronger than they think if you teach them how to use your body right. And so are you. So it's not about brute force. It's about using your body in the right way. And it's stuff that's based on real world violent encounters. So it's not theory. It's not a sport. There aren't any rules. Right. So like our advanced class, I've got women in that class that are north of, you know, 65, 70 years old. They could stop a full punch from me.
Really?
And then get
good
into
for them.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you teach them how to use their body right and give them a little confidence, it goes a long way. But
well,
really
have leg strength, lower center of gravity, I guess, you know, the legs are more important in terms of self-defense,
sure,
right?
But
it's more than that.
Yes or no. It's more than that. We really teach you how you set yourself up in a way that you don't look like you're ready to hurt somebody, but you might have to. Plus, we teach a lot about pre-attack indicators. What to look for. What's the tell? What are you going to see before that attack happens? Right. Our main focus really is what happened before the fight. If you can teach someone to see what happens before the fight, they don't have to be in the fight.
Yeah, nobody
That's
wins a fight.
90%
you just lose less, but nobody wins a fight. Everybody comes out with the problem. Yeah, interesting.
Right.
Do you teach knife defense or knife weapons, edge weapons?
But it kind of falls in the same vein. So it's all kind of encompassing. So all of our stuff kind of interacts or interrelates, is interconnected. Most of it's mental. You know, 95% of self-defense is mental. You know, even shooting a gun is mental, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I do it as a philosophy. You know, I mean, like a, you know, and
no,
the,
sure.
the sim, no, I'm serious, but the similarities between flying and shooting and sailing and archery and all these things, the guitar playing. They're very similar philosophically in terms of the zone that you get into and the mindset and the discipline and the exclusion of anything else in your brain, you know, of what not to think about. It's they're all very similar, I find.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a natural act, right? It's not natural to have a small explosion going off in your hand and then throwing hot lead at something at 1,200 feet per second.
Mm-hmm.
It's not natural
to
get into an airplane and fly.
Well, it is for me, but I was kind of born to it. But it's no, it's not. And I've said exactly the same thing to people. I said, if you're not a little bit worried or a little bit nervous before we go flying, I'm worried because this is not natural, right. You know. But after they've been up for a little while, it's like, yeah, then you just become part of the airplane and away you go. And I'm still waiting for my Blue Angels ride. So if the Blue Angels are listening,
nice.
You know, I'm here. I'm 30 minutes from Pensacola. Okay, guys, you know, just, you know. Anyway, we got right. 90 seconds left, but we might go a little overtime. So Marco in the Netherlands, hey, you take care. Have a great weekend because we lose people when we get to the top of the hour. Anything we haven't covered? I mean, any other programs and things? Oh, yeah, go ahead. Let's do that. Let's get all your contact information.
Yeah, so you can get our website at www.womensfirearmacademy.com. Phone number is 406-318-7233. And you can always email us as well through the website. And that kind of goes for our stuff that's on topic and off topic. We're fortunate that we get a lot of contacts from a lot of people, even, you know, countrywide and globally. Just ask about self-defense situations, ask about scenarios that will run things by us. And we're happy to answer it. We're happy to be there for them.
See, those would be really interesting. I'd be curious what different people in different countries, especially, I don't know if you get to communist countries, oppressed countries, you know, Middle East theocracies, you know, I mean, it'd be very interesting. We don't want names, of course, you know, we want to protect people. But as far as that goes, especially since we have an international audience, we got folks in Cuba listening. You want to talk about political, and that's real close to us, you know. So
right.
It's a very interesting group of people that listen to us. So what I'd be curious about, I'll tell you, a lot of times, you know, is the law enforcement aspects, you know, the crimes that went wrong, the things that you'd be a great analyst for law enforcement screw-ups. You know, what they should have done, you know, or what the mindset is and why they're doing and the training and the attitude. You know, did we cover all? We got college degrees. There were three things we were going to talk about, and then we'll sort of end on this. So the three problems here were college degrees, affirmative action, and what was the third one? Do you remember?
No.
Let's go with affirmative action. Because this, to me, you cannot make a police force by skin color. It ain't going to work.
No, I agree. You can't make it by lowering the standards either. And
that
that's when the standards started to lower.
Okay.
Right. And that kind of fell into affirmative action as well. So if you're filling quotas, you're not going to get the candidates you used to get.
Right.
Right. So for a long time, it took me, I think it was almost 8 months to pass their background mm-hmm. check because it was involved. There's a lot of stuff
right.
going on in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of things you couldn't do. It was prohibitive. So drug use was a good example. Right? You couldn't use any hardcore drugs or major drugs. Right. And it was never a problem because it wasn't my thing. But now
right.
you've got guys that have used cocaine regularly that are getting hired. Right. And then you wonder why
boy.
You have bad things happening.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just one example. Gang membership. Right.
Mm-hmm.
LA County Sheriff's Department just had that scandal with all the guys that had the gang tattoos. They were their own gang within the Sheriff's Department.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You pull them out mm-hmm. of a culture, you lower your standards, and you put them back into a culture where now they have authority over other people.
Right.
That's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, the four cops that beat up somebody that were gang members themselves, I think at one point, I forgot where that was.
Right.
Tennessee, you know, Kentucky,
yeah,
somewhere in there.
Yeah, it was one of those. Yeah, one of those states.
That was
yeah.
in Memphis.
Yeah. Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Okay, there
yeah,
we go.
No, that was in, I think, Mississippi. Mississippi.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
kind of a problem, too.
We have a law enforcement problem.
It's gotten to the point where it's just a slip of a coin. So,
right.
But, you know, here's the thing. If I could say this, I
sure.
kind of sympathize with the police because in today's time, you're running up against people who have had no respect for authority at home, no respect for authority at school. And then when they come out into the public, they have no respect for authority that's given the right to have authority over them. And sooner or later, even the most sane police officer will be taxed to the greatest extent.
Yeah, I was
yeah,
watching the Philadelphia looters on the video last night, and you've got people by the hundreds just going into stores, and there's this one woman who's you know, the media darling, black woman, and you know, who's talking about all the looters. And it's interesting, you know, just to be right, you know, it's fascinating that most of the looters are black. And we should talk about that, too, but I don't know how that works with law enforcement. So we should at some point I want to get into, where was it, the Michael Brown, that whole scenario, that's a whole different thing too. There's many things we can talk about because this is interesting. But the point of that, I forgot the point I was going to make. Anyway, there's
that
no authority. There's no respect for authority.
And locked up. She's exciting.
Well, I think she's got six felony charges. But the attitude is that looting is okay because, you know, the people deserve it. I mean, how do you, as a cop, what do you do with that kind of attitude?
You do your job. And that's kind of the way I see it. So they don't take this the wrong way. Excuse me. I was a cop. I'm pro-cop. But I do reserve the right to pick on them. Right. So
reserve the right to what?
Need some accountability. I reserve the right to pick on them.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Right,
okay.
To call them out. Mm-hmm. The thing with the job is we all signed on the dotted line. We knew the job was dangerous. We knew we were going to have to get our hands dirty at some point.
Right.
And I think that's what's changed as well. So going back to what's changed in law enforcement, most people don't want to engage, don't want to get their hands dirty. And that leads to that downfall and breakdown to the looting, right? Because now looters can do it because no one's going to do anything or enforce it.
Right.
So even back then, you know, we got complaints. We got sued. It wasn't great. We didn't like it. But we also knew we did a job, and that's what we signed up for.
And I think
why you're seeing a lot more shootings.
Yeah. They don't even want to do the job. Shootings of police shootings because they can't handle
police
the
shootings.
Job? They can't handle the
because
pressure?
Because they won't put their hands on somebody. They won't do something in the interim. It's 0 to 10.
That's
right?
Interesting.
Use of force, it's 0 to 10 for them now. It's I've got a gun. That's my tool to solve every problem now. Whereas
as opposed to
a lot
voice,
of these incidents,
force,
sure,
physical
well,
force, restraints,
sure,
handcuffs, you know, all
absolutely.
Batons, you know, tasers. There's like a whole variety of pepper spray. There's a whole lot of tools that you can use that are non-lethal.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think a lot of these incidents, you go back and look at them, they could have been solved at the very beginning and not escalated to the point where someone was killed.
Right. We have a lot to talk about, John. I'm really glad to have you on the show. I'm serious. I hold it now only because it's the weekend and we should get going. And we have more topics. So think about it. Think about maybe like a half-hour thing where you have you do a variety of stuff, whatever the crime du jour is. We could do a crime report, self-defense situations that you hear about in the news, anything that's going on with the Women's Firearms Academy, stories from international people. There's like a ton of things you can talk about. And if it sounds interesting, I'd really like to get you and Candy to do, like, split an hour. And that still leaves me an hour for us, which is good. Because, I don't want to book up my entire week. But I think it'd be really interesting, especially if I get you two crossing over, because you two are so different, you know, just between between you and Candy. It'd be interesting, especially, I can't wait for the crossover conversations. But this is interesting. So that sounds good.
No, I'm on board.
Okay, good. All right. So I'll talk to you both off the air. We'll get it. And this would be I would do it in the 8 o'clock hour, so 8 o'clock Central Time, which I think is better for you anyway, if I remember. So it should be like 8 to 8:30 or 8:30 to 9. 9 o'clock, at some point Candace is going to return. But in the meantime, I'll be looking for guests and things. Okay, so let's do the contact one more time. Women's Firearms Academy, Facebook, websites, phone numbers, anything you want to give on that. And thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and we'll talk soon.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity, and I look forward to talking to you.
So wait a minute. Oh, I need your information. Women's Firearms
Academy. Oh, sorry.
Website, Facebook, phone.
Websites, www.womensfirearmacademy.com. Phone number is 406-318-7233. And reach out, either one of those will work for us.
Okay. And if you missed that, because everybody talks fast on my show, because I do, listen to the podcast. You can repeat it enough times, you'll get it.
Perfect.
Thanks, John. We'll talk soon. I'll talk
thank
next
you.
Friday. All right.
All right, guys,
take care. All right. Bye. Bye now. Pianki, any thoughts for the week? Any concluding issues that we haven't covered?
No, I got a busy weekend, so
okay.
Just have to take a day at a time and be careful and wish for a good thing. The weather is cooling up, so that's a break. So,
well, it's better for bike riding, that's for sure. It's a lot nicer out there.
Absolutely.
And so I intend to spend more and more of my afternoons on the trail. And it's getting nice there now, which is good. Right now, I'm hungry. It's my dinner time. What do you mean dinner time at 10 in the morning? Well, when you get up at 4, this is dinner time, trust me. All right, sir. Thank
absolutely.
You for a great week.
All right, take
and,
care. You too.
We'll talk Monday. All right.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye now. And I got to figure out what I'm going to do Monday. I've got some ideas already. There's always stuff. I have all these stories at the bottom of my computer. You know, the beauty of the show is I don't have to talk about, you know, the Goober debate or, you know, Trump's speech was the best or that ridiculous hearing, the impeachment hearing. And you notice we're not covering a lot of stuff that everybody else covers. And that's why, because I don't care. You know, the impeachment hearing is bogus. What it should be is a treasonous hearing for stealing the White House. Where's the hearing on the coup? Where's the hearing on the stolen election? The impeachment hearing, you know, legitimates the coup because Brandon, you know, is being treated as a president and not as an imposter. So I don't approve of this impeachment hearing at all. It should be a hearing on the stolen election and the coup and the treasonous aspect of actually stealing our government and all complicit Democrats and Republicans that did it. That's what it should be. But that's why I haven't talked about it. Anyway, let me play a couple more announcements here, and we shall be back, as always, Monday morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we shall do it all again. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. And as always, we're looking for sponsors, and this is how you can get involved in that. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines.